From the Southeast Asian capital city of the Philippine Islands, Manila, I bid you all good day, good afternoon, morning, or evening, whatever it may be, wherever you are in the world. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM, the very largest talk show of its type in the world. That's no small claim, actually. So, hi, everybody. We survived the typhoon. I should have a T-shirt made up. We survived Cimarron. Actually, it was easy. For a change, one kind of missed us. This one hit land as a big super typhoon, Cat 5, Category 5, with winds of 295 kilometers. And what it did is it ran into, it turned north a little bit. It ran into the mountains, which typhoons detest. And, of course, that limited its impact somewhat. It did do a lot of damage and killed some people up north. So it didn't go without damage, that's for sure. But here in Manila, the most we got was a little bit of wind, a little bit of rain. And thank goodness we finally had one miss. There have been about 19 typhoons affecting the Philippines area of responsibility. And so that's a lot for this year. So what I guess the East Coast of the U.S. Did not get, we got. So in order to continue to get the storms that that the East Coast missed, I had to move to the other side of the world here. So that's it. Cimarron is now back out at sea and headed toward Vietnam. Good luck, Vietnam. Ghost to Ghost. Coming up this week, Wednesday for me, Tuesday for you all, we're going to have a Ghost to Ghost program. And it is a traditional affair that we do here on Coast to Coast every year. And on that night, we don't have any guests, no guests, except for you all. And I give you an opportunity to tell your absolutely best ghost stories, not two or three, but one. So even if you have a multitude of experiences, all I want is one. I want one very, very good one, told in a way that will chill the souls of those listening. Told in a way that I know you can do if you concentrate on it. So we're going to be looking for the very best. Screening. Yes, screening. That's right. For the very best of the ghost stories. So be prepared when you call. That'll be coming up the 31st, I guess, is the best way to put it, since we have different days. It is Monday here. It is now Monday afternoon, a little bit about 10 after 2 in the afternoon. So things have changed a little bit for me in that I now do the show an hour later here in the Philippines. But we didn't have to change clocks here. Didn't have to change thing. The webcam shot tonight is of Bukidnon Province, and that is where my my dear wife is from. Speaking of which, Erin is now Erin. Erin had never, in her entire life, been to the dentist, as is the case with so many Philippine people. She had never been to the dentist ever. So about a month ago, I started her going to a dental clinic near us. And she is now learning the joys of fillings, of having numb gums, of root canals, and ultimately of bridges and things of that sort. She's actually coming toward the end of her encounter with the dentist, and it's been something to watch. I mean, somebody who has never been to the dentist in their life, and I must say she's handling it very, very well indeed, much better than I did. I really never did like root canals. Very briefly, around the world, we are not the ones who got the big storm. Big storm occurred in the Northeast. Thousands of homes, businesses, had no electricity Sunday from Maryland all the way to Maine as a big storm raged its way across the region with winds gusting to more than 50 miles an hour. In fact, 60 miles an hour recorded Sunday in northern New York State. So the big storm really hit the U.S. and the northeast part of the U.S. and missed the Manila area anyway, thank goodness. A Nigerian airliner with 104 people on board slammed into the ground moments after takeoff Sunday Aviation authorities said six people survived. The rest feared to be dead. That was the third deadly crash of a passenger plane in less than a year in this West African nation, known for its notoriously unsafe air industry. I recall taking a domestic flight, a domestic Aeroflot flight in Russia, which I will never do again. Oh, my God, what a flight that was. The tires on the jet had big holes in them. That was the first clue. And then we got up into the airplane, and you walked into the bathroom, and it was sticky. Your feet were sticking to the floor for reasons that I won't describe. And then the seats in the aircraft, they were really funny. Because they just they did not lock in position. In other words, the seat, you could push on the person in front of you, and everybody in front of you would go down like a bunch of dominoes. So not everywhere in the world is aircraft maintenance quite the priority that it is in the U.S. Now, speaking of, out of the U.S., Mexican police are now down south, where there's been a lot of trouble. Vicente Fox sent them down there, finally, in exasperation, I guess, after an American journalist got killed and some Mexicans got killed. And so they are retaking one of their cities, Oaxaca, in southern Mexico. Firefighters, aided by dying winds, appeared to be finally winning the battle Sunday against a 63-square-mile wildfire that killed four of their own, destroyed more than 30 homes. The 40,450-acre blaze, which authorities say was set by an arsonist, was 70% contained 4 days after blowtorch gusts overran a U.S. Forest Service crew. Four members killed, a fifth left clinging to life with burns over most of his body. That's not a good way to go. Republicans on Sunday said a major voter turnout effort would help them stay in power after the November 7 elections, while Democrats claimed momentum as they seek to tap into voter unhappiness over Iraq. Both sides agreed the war in Iraq was a leading, if not central, issue in the contest to decide control of the House and Senate. You may recall, prior to the Iraq War, I was very, 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 very much against our going into Iraq and beginning the war, the second war. But my view is that now that we are there, that's history, and we had better win. I don't think the U.S. really can stand another defeat, as in Vietnam, as in the way Vietnam is viewed as a defeat. And I see no other way to view when you cut and run. We're there. We might as well finish the job. The official opening exchange rate for the Chinese yuan was set at a record high against the U.S. dollar Monday. Now, that's an interesting story and one that's being underreported. The currencies here in Asia, including, I might add, the peso here in the Philippines, is gaining strength against the U.S. dollar. When I arrived here, it was about 53 pesos for every U.S. dollar, and that's a lot. It is presently about 49.8, and that's a big change. And that's occurring not only with the peso, but with yuan, with other Asian currencies against the dollar. Look out, dollar. Halloween came early at movie theaters as, get this, Saw 3. That's the name of the movie, Saw 3. Sliced up the competition, they couldn't avoid using that phrase, I guess, with $34.3 million in the debut, the best opening yet for the gory horror franchise. Lionsgate Saw 3 easily took over as number one at the box office, bouncing and bumping and slicing through Disney's Disney's Dueling Magicians saga. So I guess these days, especially near Halloween, if it's competition between a nice, cheery little family-type Disney movie and Saw 3, well, guess what? In a moment, we'll look at some other news and open lines coming up in just a second. Stacy in Dallas, Texas says, "Hey, Art, I was just going to mention the domino chair effect on Aeroflot planes domestically. Did your plane creak really as loudly as you took off as mine did? You'd think by 1988 they'd fix their planes. Guess not. Never again, right? You said it. Yes, I did. Never again is indeed correct. I took a whole bunch of photographs of that Aeroflot experience, and every now and then I go back and I remind myself and I wonder why I ever got on that airplane. NASA managers are debating on whether to risk a shuttle flight mission to extend the life of the Hubble Space Telescope. Here we go again. The 16-year-old orbital observatory is expected to function for, perhaps two or three more years without a service call by space shuttle astronauts. But after that, if they don't go up and fix it, equipment upgrades could keep the world's premier observatory operating until at least 2013. We haven't even approached the limits of what we can do with Hubble, according to one senior project scientist. Using the orbiting Hubble telescope, which has captured some of the most spectacular images in the universe, boy, are they incredible. Scientists recently found between 8 and 16 new planets near the center of the Milky Way with it. The U.S. Space Agency had planned a fifth service call to the telescope to install two new science instruments and to replace spent batteries and faulty steering gyroscopes, but NASA canceled the servicing after the 2003 Columbia disaster, and now they're not sure if they're going to go back and fix it or not. The discovery, the discovery of radioactive snails at a site in southeastern Spain where three U.S. hydrogen bombs fell by accident about 40 years ago may trigger a new U.S. joint Spanish cleanup effort operation. The hydrogen bombs fell near the fishing village of Palmores in 1966 after a mid-air collision between a bomber and a refueling craft in which 7 of 11 crew died. Hundreds of tons of soil were removed from that area, shipped to the U.S. after high explosive igniters on two bombs, in fact, detonated on impact, spreading plutonium dust-bearing clouds across nearby fields. Spanish authorities say the appearance of higher than normal levels of radiation in snails and other creatures shows there may be dangerous levels of plutonium and uranium below ground, and a further cleanup could be necessary. We have to study the dirt. We have to look underground, said Juan Antonio Rubio, director general of Spain's research agency, CIMAT, which is carrying out an investigation with the U.S. Department of Energy. We don't know what's down there. But we do, don't we? Those of us who watch horror movies, we know what's down there. Can you imagine that? How many hydrogen bombs? Those are the really big ones. And the igniters scattered the plutonium all those years underground. And so snails, that's nothing. Just wait till the big things start coming up. For as yet scientifically unknown reasons, I wish I knew the author of this, the author unknown, I'd like to give you credit. At times occur when an unsuspecting person can simply just burst into flames and become incinerated. The flames begin when the victim's own body are horribly complete in their work, reducing the human fuel to nothing but a pile of ashes in just minutes, sometimes in seconds. The whole event is so quick and selective that objects near the victim only show minor heat damage, if any at all. Sometimes even the victim's clothes are virtually left untouched, but the person burned to a cinder. These inner flames have been occurring for as long as mankind has existed, but most coroners, pathologists, scientists, and fire officials ignore any such evidence, simply choosing neater, less controversial explanations for these unexplained deaths, but they do indeed occur. There are several types of spontaneous human combustion. One, the fatal cases of spontaneous human combustion represent 3/4 of all cases that have been encountered. It is understandable where no victim is left to explain what happened. There's room left for mystery, and in a majority of these cases, there was no witness to the actual event itself other than the victims. In this group of cases, there appears to be three major subtypes that encompass most but not all of the cases. One, the victim's body and clothing is mostly reduced to ash. Two, small portions of the body, an arm, a foot, maybe the head, remain unburned. Three, only objects immediately associated with body burned. The fire never spread away from the body at all. Four, a greasy soot deposited covers the ceiling and walls, usually stopping 3 to 4 feet above the floor. And five, objects above this 3 to 4 foot line show signs of heat damage, melted candles, cracked mirrors, that kind of thing. Objects below this line, no damage at all. Type 2 would be the non-fatal cases, the remaining one-quarter of the cases of spontaneous human combustion found in research involve non-fatalities. Unfortunately, the victims of these events generally have no better idea of what happened to them than do the investigators. But the advantage, of course, to this grouping is that a survivor can confirm if an event had a simple explanation or not. Thus, there are far fewer cases of spontaneous human combustion with survivors that can be explained away by skeptics without a second look. As with the fatal cases, there are three major subtypes in the non-fatal cases. The first are those exhibiting mysterious flames, representing a little over half of the known non-fatal cases. Now, this feature might sound somewhat obvious at first. After all, SHC, spontaneous human combustion, is by definition people burning. As it turns out, however, a large number of accounts attributed to non-fatal SHC do not involve any form of witnessed flame. Thus, the next two subtypes, the second subtype of the non-fatal cases, are the cases characterized by mysterious burns. In these cases, the victims develop burns on their bodies, have no known external cause whatsoever. These strange wounds commonly start as small discomforts that slowly grow into large, painful marks. And the last subtype of the non-fatal cases would be those that exhibit mysterious smoke. Now, we all know where there's smoke, right? In these odd and rare occurrences, smoke is seen to emanate from a person. No associated fire or source of smoke other than the person's body. Yikes. I've always wondered if that was real, if spontaneous human combustion was a real thing or not. Apparently, it is. And I just have no concept of how it could occur. None at all. So, what do you imagine? Do you imagine, I mean, you can talk about many things, people who have a large amount of fat in their body weight. We all know that the fat burns very quickly, right? Other than that, I mean, we're mostly water, as we have discussed many, many times. Our bodies are made up primarily of water, and you just cannot imagine how we would burn. Let's try and take one call before the break. West of the Rockies, Scott, I think, in Indiana, you're on the air.
Hello, how are you today?
I am quite well, especially in view of the fact the typhoon ran into the mountains. Ha, ha, ha.
That was a good deal. I got two questions for you. Actually, it's a two-part question. I've heard George talking about the biometric card that they're starting to instigate between Canada and Mexico. First of all, do you know for certain that it is biometric or not?
I do not.
Okay. The reason I'm asking is my company that I drive a truck for has recently had all of the drivers apply for these, what they call Fast Pass to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not gotten the result yet from it. But basically, it's to allow free trade for citizens to pass the border without inspection.
No, I'm not so sure about this without inspection business. We live in very dangerous times, and I'm not comfortable with that one. Are you?
Well, it's supposed to expedite. I'll put it that way.
Well, I know, but it might expedite a bomb.
Well, I'm not arguing that, but I've heard George mention several times that it will be a biometric card associated with it. And
on the one hand, sir, we really need free trade going on between Mexico, America, and Canada, in fact, all of the Americas, so that we can compete with where I am over here in Asia. You wouldn't believe what's going on over here. So we need that. We need to be able to compete as a hemisphere against the others and the European Union and so forth and so on. But, man, we live in really dangerous times, so I don't know.
Okay. Well, my second part of the question was, they have made mention of the secret government in the U.S., who is making these deals with Canada and Mexico, basically underscoring our constitutionally protected rights. If this is true, and by opening up the free trade between Canada and Mexico is doing away with our protected rights, why are we in the Middle East trying to bring...
Okay, I'm sorry, I'm out of time. I'll try and answer that when we get back. This is Coast to Coast AM. Secret government? That's what the last caller was asking about, secret government. I don't know anything about a secret government. Not a thing. Could there be one? Yes, there could be one. Could there be an operational group actually above and beyond the President of the United States, the Congress and the Senate, the judiciary? Yes, I suppose there could be. And other than the orders I receive regularly, I don't know a thing about it. By the way, again, the webcam photograph, I'm being asked about that. Somebody said, hey, Art, nice picture. Is that from a mountainous region? Yes, indeed it is. Is it clean water? Yes, indeed it is. Looks to be. And cold, too, like a mountain stream. That's exactly what it is in Bukidnon province. And that's where my wife is from. Now, I'm kind of in a decision-making quandary here over the next 6 months or so. I'm going to make a decision. I could well come back to the U.S. I like it very much here. No matter what happens, I would not give up the condominium I have here. It's really beautiful, really a nice place. And then the third possibility is that I may choose to move down to Mindanao, to someplace in Mindanao, or perhaps even here on Luzon. I picture kind of a, I'm in a condominium building, as you know, and I've not yet approached the management. Now that I've got my ham license here, I'm going to approach the management, but I don't really expect a yes answer. Now, if I can put up antennas here, that'd be way cool, for a ham radio, but I don't really expect a yes, much as I'm going to plead my case, so... The third possibility would be to build a house. I've got this picture in my mind. There are some, just incredibly pristine areas here in the Philippines. Sort of on a hill overlooking the ocean somewhere with a few hectares. That's what they're called here as opposed to acres. Few hectares and lots of antenna space and that kind of a setup. So I'm wavering between staying right here, perhaps venturing back to the United States, or building myself a nice house on a hill in paradise. So I don't know. I'm just at that stage of my life where I'm likely to do anything. I'm very volatile, as you know. So there you have it. All right, back to open lines. Anything you want to talk about is fair game. Let's go to Sean in New York on the wild card line. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Art. You mentioned the Hubble Space Telescope a while back.
Yes.
Do you suppose that it would be possible for the shuttle, a shuttle mission, to go up there and recapture the thing, since it brought it up in the first place, and then tow it over to the International Space Station and thereupon reinstall it on the space station itself so as not to lose the thing, not to cause it to, go back into the atmosphere?
Okay, my understanding is that the orbits of the space station, even the shuttle when it goes up, are just simply nowhere near Hubble. So to go to Hubble would require a specific Hubble mission, and because of the tragedies we've had and the trouble we've had, they're not thinking they've got the time or the ability to get to it. So it's going to be a big controversy.
I know President Bush said that he wanted to go back to the moon at some point. Do you think a worthwhile first step back to the moon would be something like a mission to capture the Hubble and perhaps set it on the moon as a future observatory or some such thing?
It's a pretty cool idea.
Yeah.
No question about that. I don't know. The answer to the question is I don't know, sir, and I only hope that we don't let the Hubble, re-enter or be destroyed or ignore it or whatever. I'm kind of depressed about our current status in space or lack of status in space. We're just, I don't know, seems like we're not replacing the shuttle in a timely manner. And we just sort of, we don't have the spirit we once had that President Kennedy ignited in all of us to go into space and leave our Earth, go to the moon and beyond. So even the moon, I mean, we haven't been back to the moon, much less beyond. And it's all a little depressing. I'm sure in enough time, we will once again turn our heads toward the heavens and begin to move outward. I hope so. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Good morning, Art Bell.
Good morning.
It is a pleasure to speak to you.
And to you.
Congratulations on everything that's happening in your life. I'd have to say, I'm a minister, and you commented on spontaneous human combustion.
Yes.
I'd have to say when I began to get into the ministry, I didn't go through the traditional route. I went through a local church, and they had a course on ufology. That led me to ghostology.
They had a course on ufology?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And ghostology? What kind of church?
It was a Baptist church, actually. I continued on into ghostology. It was the natural progression for me. Simultaneously, I began listening to your show. Mm-hmm. And so in my studies, what I found out, number one, there's always patterns, and I look for patterns. In the scriptures, it constantly speaks about being happy. There's consequences to not being happy, and one of those consequences, I believe, is when you're constantly down, I guess the continence is down, depressed, it opens your life up to demonic oppression. If you study the stories on humans, spontaneous human combustion, you'll usually see there's drinking involved, or usually depression of some kind. And
you could become so depressed you would burst into flames.
Well, there's something would take over your body, some form of spirit. One thing that's often said is complaints of sulfur.
Uh-huh.
And with the EP or EVPs last night.
Yes.
Your guest mentioned in one of the stories
that
the family had to run out the house.
That's right.
And I think it all ties in.
It that's as good an explanation as I have heard from anybody. It's entirely possible, as weird as spontaneous human combustion is, you certainly cannot rule out demonic possession. In fact, you cannot rule out demonic possession, period. But certainly, it might be one reasonable explanation for spontaneous human combustion. Or maybe people simply finally get so depressed that, as he pointed out, they become targets for possession and then poof. Or let's see, I still have cigarettes here. This makes a nice little the crackle of flames. I found that, as you know, I'm trying to quit smoking, and I have been pretty successful. I'm doing quite well, with one exception, and that is being on the air. There are, as smokers will tell you, there are certain times that, you just have to have a cigarette. One of them is when shortly after you wake up in the morning with a cup of coffee. Another is after meals. I mean, it's automatic. And then for me, unfortunately, another is being on the air. The radio bone is connected directly to the smoking bone. And, I've been in broadcasting now all my adult life. And I've always smoked when I'm on the air. Always. And I'm even cutting back on that now. But it is the most difficult of them all. I've conquered the, to some degree, the morning cigarette, the after-meal cigarettes, and an awful lot of the in-between cigarettes. So I'm about 90% cut down. But the on-the-air cigarettes, that one almost seems impossible. But I'm working on it. First-time caller line, you are on the air.
Hello, Art. How are you today?
I'm fine, Michael.
Yes, I would like quickly, if this is the first time I'm calling, all these years I've been listening, and all these years I've thought of all the long drawn-out speeches, the long intellectually stimulating answers I'm going to have, and this is what it comes down to. Two points, quickly. On free trade, there is no such thing as free trade with Mexico. Secondly, I could put to bed fines of spontaneous combustion. You know what that is?
What?
People are hot. And with that said, thank you very much.
That was it. After all those years, it boils down to that. People are hot. Some people are hot, some not. Let's go to Canada, west of the Rockies to be sure, but in Canada, you're on the air, Jim.
Hi there, and good day to you from the West Coast out here. I just heard the repeat of your water show the other week.
Ah, yes.
Quite
yes.
A phenomenal subject. And I was thinking, you know, regarding the groupthink thing that you tried there a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
the mass consciousness thing. You know, if we have the technology to, you know, if we all band together to create a lot of great solutions, and I was thinking if we could just, in a mass consciousness thing, just go for efficacy and respect for life on this planet, and we'll get rid of these globalists and their money-making destructive natures, and we'll just sort of put them out to pasture, so to speak, get them effectively out of business through a mass consciousness thing. And I think... giving your show.
Wait a minute. I'm not sure that I'm against the concept of money making.
I'm just talking about the
I mean, globalists.
Efficacy, you know? Respect.
Well, I'm not. The efficacy of it is a good question. What's wrong with it?
Well, why doesn't your country have medical for everybody without a massive headache of bills and suffering? And, you know, why can't we just do the best for everybody as opposed to just the best for the few?
Well, your country is Canada, right?
That's correct.
My understanding is that the free medical for everybody is not quite what it would be made out to be. Number one, it's virtually going broke. Number two, if you need an operation and you need it quickly, you might not get it, and the only way you're going to get it is come down to the U.S. and pay for it.
Well, if you have the money to do it in either country, you're obviously better off, but there's a lot of people in your country that don't have the money, and they suffer for that. And so sometimes waiting isn't an option for them because there's a big bill to pay at the end of the road anyway. But I was just thinking in the more, you know, as far as efficacy and mass consciousness, it would, you know, it's almost like inaction is karma that is eternal. And we should all try to do our best with the tools we have. And you have one exceptional tool that you've created. And I think it would be, you know, it would be great for... you know, just to sort of put everybody in a positive perspective with respect to eliminating the corruption that's hoarding a lot of governments around the world and eliminating these mass corporate entities that are breaking up our consciousness about truth and awareness. Because, you know, like knowledge lights the path to wisdom and wisdom builds the path to spirituality. So if we can get together on a spiritual wavelength, I think we can cure a lot of the deficiencies that are manipulated by the globalists.
You know? All right, Jim, thank you. Look, I am certainly against the corruption at any level, whether it's local corruption, state corruption, national corruption, whatever it is. Corruption is an evil that has got to go. But that is not to say that all big business is corrupt. And that's where I think a lot of the people who call themselves anti-globalists go wrong. They make the automatic assumption that all large business is evil. It's not. It's simply not. It's like anything else. Some would be corrupt and evil, I suppose, and some not. So it's not a black and white issue. And I suppose I'll get emails and they'll say power corrupts, and more times than not, perhaps it does. But not always. So not always does big mean bad. We are headed toward a global economy, whether we like it or not. Now, I hope we can get there without a lot of corruption and a lot of dirty dealing. But without question, that's where we're headed. I think I've said this before. In the beginning, people traded with their neighbors. Then they began trading from little towns to little towns. Then they began trading, in the U.S. as an example, from state to state. And then countries began trading. And now, in today's world, we're in a situation where you've got the European community trading pretty much as a bloc, certainly monetarily together as a bloc. You've got Asia over here, where I am, beginning to form, China going berserk. Even the Philippines, where I am, beginning to get up off its knees and start to move economically. And, of course, Japan, Korea, and Asia in general going crazy. And the Americas have got to do the same thing. So it's headed in this direction, whether we like it or not. Whether we can shape the ethics of how we arrive at the other end is a very good question, however. Wildcard Line 3, you are on the air. Chris in Pittsburgh.
Hey, Art, thanks for having me on the show. I'm a big fan of yours. I've always been listening to your show even as a kid. So quick question for you, though. I've been doing kind of research on my own a little bit about John Titor. And all the evidence, the research I've been finding is kind of old. Do you know if there's been any developments in kind of that field, or do you think?
I've heard nothing at all lately about Titor. So I saw a rumor that there might be a movie about Titor's exploits, but that's the only thing I've heard in a long time now. Otherwise, I've not heard any new information at all.
Yeah, I've looked on, the internet and whatnot, and it's all old information. And especially with September 11th, that kind of gets you to think a little bit. Maybe this, what he's kind of alluding to. Of course, it could be a hoax, but for people like us, why not think out of the box,
But, here's what I'll say. All the time travel people, from Dr. Anderson to, I won't even read off the list. But there are many, many, many time travel people over the years that I've interviewed that I consider to be legitimate in their fields. And I must tell you, they all have disappeared. They're gone. Now, they may have just simply chosen to disappear, or they may have done what they do. And that is to say, they may be in a different time. Who knows? It certainly is fascinating to consider, isn't it? East of the Rockies, you're on the air in Houston, Texas. Mike.
Hey, how you doing? Art, I heard your comment earlier about the U.S. space program kind of floundering or really fizzling a little bit over the years.
I think that's right, yes.
Okay, and I've noticed that, too, that since the development of the space shuttle. That was the last big push after the moon missions, I think, to get the space shuttle developed and get it going. They moved to the space station, and I'm not real sure what benefits we're getting from the space station.
It's about halfway finished right now, and of course, we just resumed a little bit of construction on it, but it's only about halfway done.
Right. But, on the other hand, Hubble sits out there and hangs out there in space, and they're providing all kinds of discoveries, about the universe. And I question you being here in Houston, why don't we focus more on space exploration, go back to the moon, go back to go to Mars, and then kind of leave the space station alone. And I was just kind of wondering what you thought about that.
Well, what I think is that once a project like the space station, hundreds of billions of dollars begins, wasn't supposed to be that much in the beginning. There's a bureaucratic base that builds with it, sir, that's almost impossible to stop. It's a project underway, and whether or not it's worth what we're now having to spend on it or not, I think we're going to continue with it. And whether it turns out to pay for itself, I think, is highly in question.
I do too. So.
I'm with you. I think we should be looking outward, going outward. I know that it costs money, but hey, America's a rich nation. It can pretty much afford to walk and chew gum at the same time.
Yeah, actually, I think I'd like to see a space station on the moon as opposed to the one we currently have. Something that we can launch further missions from.
I'm with you all the way, buddy. It's just a little depressing, but given enough time and perhaps another administration or so, and I'm sure we'll be back in biz. From Manila in the Philippines, I'm Art Bell. Yes, they'll be calling you a fanatical criminal and such. Michael from Studio City, California says, hey, Art, good work. I had not thought of blaming President Bush for the Hubble telescope life expectancy coming to an end, and you apparently know it's not going to be repaired. Very creative. Got any more? You really hate Bush, don't you? No, Michael, I don't. People really want to label somebody. I didn't vote for President Bush, but in retrospect, and it's about time for a little retrospection when it comes to this administration, I think he's been a pretty good president, all things considered. He's had a rough go of it. Look what's happened while he's been president. I think his response has been appropriate. What would you have done, Michael? I think President Bush has been a fairly decent president, actually. There are others that that I did dislike to some great degree. Johnson comes to mind. Oh, I hated Johnson. But President Bush, no, not at all. Sorry. Sorry, Michael. I don't hate him. I really don't. I know there are many out there who do. Coming up in a moment, Daryl Sims. He became a researcher of anomalous scientific studies, including UFOs, way back at age 16 through his voluntary military service during the Vietnam War. So he was there, too. He was then sheep-dipped, in other words, borrowed by the Department of Defense from the military and placed into the CIA for 2 years. There he served in covert ops, providing security, some martial arts training and other activities for the JOTs, junior officer trainees, in other words, soon to be spies, or more correctly said, case officers for the field for the U.S. government. This he did during his tenure with the company. Sims also adds that there's a lot of controversy about one's claims of clearances and what one can or cannot say about them. So coming up in a moment, Daryl Sims. Just one quick reminder before I bring Daryl on, and that is Ghost to Ghost coming up the 31st. Now, we're very close. I want nothing but the very, very best, the scariest ghost stories you can come up with. Now, my screener for this program is going to be Tom Danheiser. Personally, he is going to do the screening, and he is one mean mama when it comes to screening. So you better have a good story ready. He's going to be listening, and we're going to make it a very good program. It is a yearly affair on Coast, and there is no question. I don't see how there can, for example, after last night's program with EVP, I see there can be no question in my mind that we are getting voices. There are entities out there that are beyond the physical of what we are right now. I mean, there just are. It's real. The whole thing is real. There's something to it. And there is certainly something to Ghost to Ghost. So I would suggest that you review the story you're going to tell. We're going to only allow one single good story from each caller. And we'll hope for the best. So kind of get your story together. Get it together in your mind. Do a little outline if you can. That'll help you when you get on the air. And if you want to send one in, there's a chance I might read it on the air. Keep it short. Send it to artbell@mindspring.com. That's ArtBell at Mindspring, MindSpring.com. That said, Daryl Sims, welcome to Coast AM.
Hello. Thank you, Art. Good to be here.
Well, actually, welcome back.
It's a pleasure always to be here with you.
All right. I don't know where to begin here, but let's start with this clearance controversy, I guess, huh?
Yes, sir.
You have what kind of clearances?
I have currently have a secret clearance. I originally had a top secret clearance, and that changes after 10 years to a secret clearance due to the information being downgraded and so on. Basically, what that means, and for your audience, I think it might be useful for some of them to kind of catalog this information a bit. If someone claims to have a clearance, like myself or anyone else, that clearance will show up on your DD Form 214.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And if it doesn't show up on it, it's because you don't have one. And if it does show up on it and you don't have a clearance, but you have it on your form, on a DD form 214, that means you faked it or somebody put it on there and you're not supposed to have it on there. The problem with this to me, and I get this a lot because I speak a lot to conferences. I just got back from a European tour. And one of the questions I usually get out of the audience, at least at every conference, is, what's your clearance, and what do you think of so-and-so who's telling everybody all these whopper secrets directly from the intelligence community or wherever it is they claim to be from?
Can I butt in and ask a general question? I think a lot of the audience would like to know, and I would too, and that is, we've got secret, we've got top secret, and then what, you know, I've heard about Q clearances, and I've heard other references to acronyms for clearances. Do you know what comes above top secret?
Well, there is a Q clearance. There are actually several categories of other clearances that people can have. I was not involved in that. My business was simply at a top secret level in the company for specifically what we did in covert operations. But there are other clearances. I do not know the details of them. I never was made aware of what they were, so I can't comment with in good conscience as to what they are or the validity of some of them. There are other clearances, though, that are above top secret.
Okay. So you do know Q is a real clearance?
Yes, of course. Yes.
All right. All right. Is there anything, do you know, you don't know then whether there's actually anything above Q?
There are different designations, and this often sometimes further compartmentalizes information so that you don't have these type of as bad of problems as we had with the FBI guy for years that was feeding the Russians everything they wanted for about 20 years. The problem with that, the reason Russians were so confident to challenge us on every issue is this guy, and I have no idea how he did this, had so much access to what our actual strategy was, our battle plans for war, that mm-hmm. when he gave this information to them, they challenged us obviously on various points, and they found what would work and what wouldn't. That's why they were successful in challenging us all those years. They could get away with almost everything, and we didn't know. We did not know he was handing everything to them. So they were reading our playbook, so to speak. They knew exactly where to challenge.
Well, I recall, I was a medic in the Air Force, surgical tech in the Air Force. And I remember when I went TDY from Okinawa to here in the Philippines, as a matter of fact, to Clark, I had to get a secret clearance. And so, and prior to that, I had not had one. So it's kind of on a need to know basis need to know. In other words, they don't go out and just automatically give anybody a clearance. You don't get the clearance until you have a reason to need that clearance. You just don't automatically get it.
That is correct.
Okay. Why did you need a top secret clearance?
Well, the first of all, to answer a little bit about what sheep dipping is that basically what you said was correct. They borrow you from the Department of Defense or wherever you're at. Department of Defense does this. That's the catch-all for whoever wants you out of that fish tank, so to speak. They draw you from there, and then you go to wherever you're supposed to be. Mine was the Central Intelligence Agency for 2 years. The reason for my purpose having to have a top secret clearance simply was because of the fact, the nature of the base where I was stationed. This was one of three top secret CIA bases in country, where training and other activities occur. The company is not allowed to do spying in country on us, so to speak. It's kind of strange for them to do that, but they're not allowed to do that by congressional order. However, NSA is, and the FBI is, and Army Security Agency and others are. So it's really amusing. And it has created a huge problem. In fact, when I was in back in 68 through 71, the problem we had back then is we had a liaison who was what we called witting. In other words, he had a top secret clearance, and he knew exactly how to communicate between the FBI and the CIA. The problem was, to make them feel comfortable, this is amusing, to make them, the FBI feel comfortable, we picked one of their people to be the liaison. The only problem is he was one of our people working for them. And it's a fact. This is proof. And
well, look, there was a big change, Daryl.
It's awful,
after 9/11, really, the Department of Homeland Security pretty much became the boss of all the intel agencies, or the clearinghouse for information for all of them, didn't it?
It did, and it's a very good idea. Well, 911 is the best example of what went wrong. And if I could comment about who, if there was a blame to lay, everyone has missed the real blame. It wasn't CIA for the most part, you know, although everyone can share in this, I believe me. And it wasn't the FBI for the most part. The biggest problem is NSA. In fact, I wrote an article about this and put it on the internet. And a friend of mine told me they'd written a counter article. Now, this is weird. Why would they be reading? Why would they put out a counter article that same week? But I flatly blamed the NSA. No one knows more about this country than NSA. NSA is 8 times the size of the Central Intelligence Agency.
Well, so basically, you said what about the NSA?
I said they're at fault for 911 occurring and for us not knowing. That it just to me, it was a great stretch of my imagination that NSA could not know, even if everybody else had screwed up. NSA has to know. I mean, these people are so massive in their ability. It is just it's just phenomenal. I mean,
it is phenomenal, but at that time we didn't have the kind of authority to wiretap and to do all the rest that they've got today. So how can you say they had to know? I mean, intelligence agencies are good. And frankly, they do it. It seems to me they don't get credit, of course, because we never know about the good things they do and they prevent. But how can you say they had to know?
Well, from my viewpoint, contacts I had within the within that agency, and one that still is there, and I can only say this in my word is it's that and 50 cents get you a bad cup of coffee and it'll never get you to Starbucks, but in my opinion, they knew a lot more than the CIA and the FBI and other intelligence agencies, simply due to their size and the fact that these people, they monitor so much that goes on. I mean, it's just, I mean, even the things that that have been Bill Gates' situation with the little additions that were allowed to be placed in the new computer so that those could be monitored in the event that it became legal. I mean, that's curious that possibility is already there before it became law.
Right, but they really did not have the kind of reach prior to 9/11 they have now.
That is true. But just by the sheer volume of a group that monitors activities in the United States for the most part, 8 times the size of the Central Intelligence Agency, is just that's just enormous. And and for of course the big problem of all of it is the fact that information just flat was not shared, and that was almost our downfall in that whole business.
All right. What is your official capacity now, if any?
I have no official capacity whatsoever with the intelligence community. In fact, there are some people that, I mean, in the UFO community, you're either guilty on one charge or guilty on another. One of them is the people say, well, you never were in the CIA or your military police or you never were a military police officer or anything, so you must have made it all up. Well, if that's true, the forms that I have, in fact, you put I gave you several of them to put up on your website back in 1996, I think it was. And those forms, if those are altered in any way as a federal document, it's a federal felony.
Sure.
I mean, I'm looking at, 10, 20 years, however long it is, So if they're fake documents, then there's my problem. The fact is the documents are quite real, and people should be able to prove who they say they are, especially if they're making claims about UFOs and things like this. Mm-hmm. I mean, I honestly, I have no problem with people coming clean and saying, hey, you know what, this is what I know and how I know it. And if, as long as you're not in violation of your clearance agreement statements, then you can talk about all kinds of stuff. But these people who really have clearances, they know exactly how far to push that envelope, where to stop. Okay. And if they're still maintaining their clearance, that clearance is, you have to get recertified every 5 years if you're going to maintain that clearance. And these
Why do you maintain your clearance now?
Well, I don't. I have not maintained it because I have no need for it at this point. My clearance went from top secret to secret. That was strictly an administrative act that is done by the people who certify it. And they simply sent me a letter about 10 years after my military service and says your top secret clearance has now been changed to a secret clearance, and this does not reflect upon your trustworthiness or honesty, but it's just administrative action. Okay. And, you know, that's just a letter they sent.
All right. Now, so you're not acting in any professional capacity. Nevertheless, you do UFO abduction research. How did you come to do that? I mean, how did you come to start? It's an odd field to be in to begin with.
You couldn't have asked a better question. First of all, I was, in my opinion, it was just a captive audience. I actually had UFO encounters at age 4, and as a result, that obviously got my attention because I had no idea what in the world the entity was standing in my room at age 4. That obviously colored my experience a great deal. My event stopped at age 13 years later at age 17, and rather violently. And after that, a year before that, actually, at age 16, I started studying scientific anomalies with a psychology teacher of mine in Alamogordo, New Mexico, in the high school there. And my interest in the UFOs is just one of the things we studied, but that was obviously a very good one, simply because UFOs were seen on a fairly often basis out there in Alamogordo around the Holloman Air Force Base. We saw cigar-shaped objects and things like that would literally stop. They would stop cars back then, which is weird that UFOs don't tend to do that a lot now, but they did back in the 50s and 60s and 70s, where you'd see a cigar-shaped UFO and maybe 20, 30 cars would be stranded on the highway waiting for the thing to get past. And when they did, the cars would light back up and you could just drive off. So still trying to figure out why that happened back then, but not so much now. But my involvement was became a research point of view. I wanted to find out what had been happening to me and were there other people that this was happening to as well. And that really shocked me. And when I went to college at New Mexico State University, I started finding people in the Associated Students and other places that were having UFO encounters as well. When I went into the CIA, I went into the military first as a volunteer into the military police, and that's where I got sheep-dipped or picked up by the company and placed in their outfit for 2 years.
All right. During your time with the CIA, Daryl, how much did you learn about that which you wanted to know about UFOs? Did you have an opportunity to dip into their knowledge?
No, I didn't. I did not. First of all, the place where we were at and what we were doing, there was a lot of stuff that we were privy to, but it was not in the UFO arena, and I was actually doing UFO abduction work there, not for them, but on the side on my own, and I didn't allow them to know about that because I didn't want to create a conflict of interest or get bounced or anything else out of a remarkably interesting job. So I wanted to stay there. So that was my rationale for not making that public. Of course, I would have listened to anything. I did see some things that that did shake my attention, but it did not prove to me that it was UFO related. Okay. But it's just that these are the things I can't talk about. But I did see some things that.
Well, I want to get to things you can't talk about. Relax, Daryl.
Really
we're gonna take a break here. We'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM from Southeast Asia, Manila. I'm Art Bell, and we'll be right back. Yes, it is. My guest is Daryl Sims, and I have a feeling that we're having this discussion about clearance levels for a specific reason. I could be wrong, but the UFO community on a regular basis shreds itself. There is more infighting that goes on in ufology than any other field I can think of. I mean, they just rip each other to pieces, and it certainly is damaging to ufology. And I just have this feeling that Daryl opened up with a discussion of clearances because he's probably taken a little bit of heat about that. We'll find out in a moment. Nothing in the world rips itself up like the UFO community. Daryl, is that why we're talking about clearances? Have you been bitten by the group out there that bites?
Oh, they bite pretty hard, don't they?
Oh, yes.
That doesn't bother me as much as, and I'll give you a perfect case in point here. This happened, a lady emailed me one night and said that she had met this guy, and he was telling her all this great stuff, and he had all kinds of highly classified secret information from the CIA, and that's where he was getting all his stuff. And I said, oh, I would be delighted to speak with him. And she arranged a meeting for us to get on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, man, I'm just delighted to meet. He said, yeah, I'm just like you. And I said, well, great. You know, you probably did a lot of stuff I never even had an opportunity to do. I said, could I ask you a couple of questions? He said, sure. I said, where'd you take your training? Quantico.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, really? I said, funny, I never was there. I said, that's a lot of FBI stuff goes on there, doesn't it? I said, there's other training that takes place there, too, other agencies. But that's not what we did. I said, so where did you finally get sent to?
Yeah.
Well, I was a spy.
Okay, well, that's enough of that.
Anybody that makes these claims, all you have to do is pin them down, and if they can't tell you who their handler was, they can't tell you where they came from, and again, if it doesn't show up on their DD Form 214, it's because they didn't have the experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that simple, and if they do have it that on their form and you know they're lying, I mean, you want to get somebody in a lot of trouble, that's the way to start.
All right. Well, anyway, it's Moxnix, because the UFO, the large part of the research you've done has come post-clearances, post-military anyway. So why don't we go on to that? I just had a feeling that we were kind of talking about that because you probably took some criticism. I know the UFO community just rips itself up, and they probably do themselves more damage than the most serious skeptics out there.
I think they do, and my only reason to bringing this up is because the Gulf Breach 6 is an example, a group of people who claimed to be, who they actually were NSA. There were six of them, NSA, and they just one day went AWOL and left Germany and just took off to Gulf Breach, and that's a whole bizarre story. The point is that each of these people actually were NSA. They're very low level, for entry level. I mean, there wasn't anything.
Oh, I recall the story very well. I interviewed one of them.
Yes, I know them very well. One of them came here to Houston to visit me, and I just flat told him. I said, you don't quit telling people that you have contacts inside, and that you're still doing all this stuff. You're not.
Why don't you tell me why they did what they did?
What was told to me by the ringleader of it was that they had this idea that they wanted to, in theory, wanted to exploit their UFO contact. They felt like that's what needed to happen. And so they went to Gulf Breach and they went AWOL. Of course, to me as a former military person, I have a totally different view of that. You, for whatever reason, couldn't handle it. You wanted out, and the way you wanted out is to start a UFO story. And he said, well, then why didn't they prosecute us? And I said, you actually think that any intelligence agency is actually going to prosecute you for studying UFOs if you go AWOL on them? They won't touch you with a stick. I mean, they don't want to be near you. I mean, that would be like That would be to your credibility, not theirs. So
no, no, but why not just prosecute them for being AWOL?
And anyway, they went to, he said, I said, well, so what did you do? He said, well, went to Gulf Breeze, and I said, then what? And he says, we had a friend of ours come down, and I won't mention his name, but he said he got together with us, and he said, we pulled out and I had this, there must have been 50 people present when this statement was made. I mean, I was floored when I heard the story. He says, we pulled out a Ouija board and started asking questions about UFOs, and that's how we got all our information.
I remember that, yeah.
I said, oh, my God. I said, I'm out of here.
I do remember that. All right.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. Look, you've got quite a story to tell, I guess, about something that's occurred in a case that occurred in Pennsylvania, right?
That is correct.
So let's move on to that. What can you tell us about this story?
This was a rather remarkable case. The individuals, it's a multi-generational circumstance. There's a grandmother, there is her adopted son, and then there is a her daughter, and then two grandchildren. And every one of these people are all abductees in the same family. Now, what's amazing about this case for me is the fact that when they first called, when she spoke to me and everything, and she was referred to me by Brian Vike, a very, very nice man up in Canada, and he said there was apparently a lot of physical evidence, and he said, we just don't have the capacity to handle this, so I'd like to turn it over to you. And I said, sure. So as I talked to the lady, I listened to her, and I realized that she was black, and I said, could you give me your a little bit of the story? And she said, well, basically, these entities have been coming into my oldest son's room, and they've been basically terrorizing him. And says he goes to bed about 4:35 in the morning every day, you know, and then he has to get up to go to school, and he lives this way, and this has been going on for some time. And says we have to get some kind of resolution to this. There's something we've got to do. We've got to help my son. I said, well, I'll actually fly up there and meet with you. I just need to collect some more data. And I said, could you give me some background on your genetics? And she said, well, we're black. And I says, well, we all are something, but probably we're a lot of something else too. And she said, oh, she said, yes. She says, well, we're actually Cherokee Irish. And I laughed and I said, 45% of our abductees actually fall in that category. She said, you're kidding. I said, doesn't matter if we're black or not. I said, the amazing thing to me, I said, a lot of black people do not admit to abductions. You hardly ever find black people admit to this.
Well, that is true. And then there's another factor here. You said that it was an adopted son.
He's an adopted son.
Yeah, now normally it follows genetic lines, and that wouldn't be the case here, right?
Well, she was asking this question to me whenever I started explaining this to her, and I said, well, David Jacobs made a wonderful statement. Someone had mentioned, actually my wife had mentioned it to me, because I'd not read his book, and the book stated, he says, among young people, he said, that are abductees, he said, they seem to be promiscuous, and this seems to be, he said, we don't know why this seems to be. And my viewpoint on it was, it made a lot of sense to me. If researchers are finding out that there's a predisposed genetic disposition in these families, that if it's systemic and it's in the families itself, and now the investigators are finding this out, and you are secretive in your, if the entities are secret, and they are, what would be the best way to hide that? Well, one of the best ways to do that was to have the children to basically produce children, young pregnancies and so on, and then for those children to be eventually adopted. And therefore, most of these children, like this young man, would be lost in the system. Mm-hmm. The only problem is that he got picked up by abductees because the grandmother, his mother, and the other relatives in the family are all abductees too. So this is just one possibility of why that may, Dr. Jacobs' statement may have some reference to this particular aspect.
And by the way, I really enjoy Dr. David Jacobs. He's one of my favorite people because he's one of the very few people in all of ufology that actually more than likely thinks that these creatures may not be all that interested in our welfare.
Well, if I had to give my my own personal thesis of that, is the term alien hunter ought to answer just about all of it. They hunted us, me first of all, when I was four, and then later I could have lived with that after I was 17. I could have lived with that until one day my two-year-old son, and that's not true, he was six at the time, six-year-old son, they came and got him one night. And my whole disposition art changed completely. It went from just angered and frustrated to, you mess with my children, I'm coming after you.
Daryl, why do you think people are being abducted? Let's get right down to it. What is your view about the motivation for abduction?
Well, I think it is. The best way for me to answer this is almost in reverse. People tell me what their idea is, and their idea is that they're trying to help us and they're upgrading us and by breeding us this way and that way. And I
said,
my opinion is based on our research for 38 years. That is the very thing that frightens them. And the fact is that if there's any breeding going on, they're breeding it out. They're breeding certain things out of people, not in, but out. And I said, this thing, this is just opinion. I mean, it's not gospel or anything, and it's nothing that, nothing I want to get beat up over or flamed over. But basically, what we're finding in our research after 38 years is there's a problem. And I think it's a serious problem. I think we're in trouble, and I think Roswell was the first case that proved it. I mean, one day you have the government saying, we found a flying saucer. The next day they're saying, no, we didn't. I have a totally different take on Roswell than anybody out there, and I think we were
sense?
Set up for a long time ago. Even
set
Roswell
up.
Was one of the first setups.
In what sense? Nobody's really surprised that one day it was a flying saucer, and the very next day it was a little bit of aluminum and a balloon. I mean,
right.
That's typical military secrecy.
Well, I think two things happened, and look, I'm going to put my intelligence hat on for just a second after about 30 years, and let me show you how that thinks. If you were them and you wanted to infiltrate our military-industrial complex, how would one do it? Well, the people don't have a clue, say, land on the White House lawn, give the president a gift. I've already saw the movie. That didn't work, and it wouldn't work. We would be watching them for forever. However, if a UFO should accidentally collide into another one, or if lightning should strike it, or whatever causes one to crash, and you sacrifice one or two craft, maybe one at Corona, one at Roswell as an example, and they landed there, and only one or two of the entities survived, it doesn't make any difference. They're just toasters anyway. I mean, you just unplugged them, that's all. There are plenty more toasters where they come from. There's a good indication these entities are not alive in the sense of the word that we used it.
When you say they're just toasters.
Well, they're giving the example. Whenever I saw the entities when I was a little boy, they didn't have he didn't have any clothes on. And what would a four-year-old child look at if you were nude? It didn't have any TT. It didn't have a belly button. It didn't have any nipples like I did. And I couldn't understand why that thing, that little man, didn't have anything. I couldn't understand it. But after 38 years of investigating and looking at this from genetics and other points of view, if you don't have genitalia, you don't multiply.
Not as we do.
Not as we do. And if you don't have a belly button, so to speak, a navel, you weren't born. Not like we were. Now, you might have been cloned, you might have been hatched, or you might have been manufactured. But you didn't nurse, and you didn't do these other things.
Yeah, that's fair enough, sure.
It just makes sense. So if my thesis is that we don't have a clue, and we still don't, that we have a lot of subterfuge by these entities, and basically, unless you're in the intelligence business or you think with an intelligence hat on, you're basically soup for whatever it is they're preparing because you don't have a clue. That's just my thesis. And the reason I say that, going back to Roswell again, is that let's say a UFO was crashed there on purpose. Or even two of them. It doesn't matter. because the model is the same. And all of a sudden, you capture, quote-unquote, an alien and a smoking hot UFO. Now, you're in charge. There's nothing to be afraid of because you own them. The only problem is that there's not one abductee out there in the entire universe that can't tell you. If one of those little entities gets near you, he can download your information from your brain so fast. It's incredible.
Most of the abductees, and I've interviewed many, many over the years, have come back with the attitude that they're pretty warm and they're pretty fuzzy, and they're not, other than the people that were just flat out terrified, they've come back with completely different attitudes, like they're here to help us, they're our friends.
Well, I think the best illustration of your point there, and mine too at the same time, is the Charlie Hickson, Calvin Parker case. Here are two police officers doing their job, get abducted during the course of their police work. One of them comes off the craft, Calvin Parker, comes off the craft with his stomach cut across, and his blood is literally soaked his jeans to the knees, and I interviewed both of them. I know them very well, for one of the best way. And here he is. He comes off the craft, an abductee. Charlie Hickson comes off the craft as a quote-unquote contactee. Now, the contactee is being defined as someone who feels like those events, whether they were pleasant or not, they were for our best and highest good, and these entities probably know best what to do with us, and so basically we should obey them and do whatever we're told to do. That would be a contactee. An abductee has had a different experience, and they probably remember a lot more of their event and their body. They pay attention to their body, which gives the feeling and the sensations of things that actually occurred. Now, here are two men on the same craft, the same time. One comes off an abductee, another one comes off a contactee. One of them's cut across the stomach, holding his stomach, bleeding all the way down to the knees. Which store do you think I'm going to buy first? It sounds
the
like
one
me,
with one the,
of,
probably the one with
one
the physical
of
evidence.
One of them became, in my opinion, it's something that we see often with this, and I discussed this with John Mack over in Istanbul, Turkey as well when we spoke over there. He says, why do I find a lot of these people that come up contactees, and you find a lot of them turn up to be abductees? And I said, John, I said, I respect you. I have a lot of respect for you. And I said, we're just discussing. He said, that's all. He said, fire away. And I said, okay. I said, first of all, you realize these entities provide a screensaver memory for everyone that's there. They give a nonsensical memory, such as a 3-foot owl with large black eyes or whatever. Something that would make you question your own event. I said, you're hypnotizing the screensaver memory, and that creates a system of a continuous system of subterfuge in that person's mind. And what you're getting is not true. It's not accurate information. Mm-hmm. And he just was stunned. And I said, you're kind of a new kid on the block. I said, you got these wonderful credentials. I said, but you're... I don't think you know the difference between memory and recall. I said, it's not showing, in my opinion, based on what you're telling me. I said, we have people that are contactees as well. I said, but it's not beyond our detection to see that these screensaver memories that these people have, it's like a computer. If you leave a computer alone, that screensaver comes up. Well, that's kind of what happens in our abduction experiences. But if you ever grab that abductee, so to speak, and shake them and get that screensaver off or remove it, you'll get back down to the hard drive and find out what's really in there.
In the cases where you've done that, Daryl, in the cases where you've gone past the screensaver, is there any common theme? In other words, are we talking about a negative experience?
For the most part, that is the case. And I've worked, this kind of hits hard. I've worked with top psychics and others in the country who feel like their experiences were positive, pleasant, uplifting, and everything. But once I got past the screensaver, they just lay there and scream.
All right. Hold it right there. Lay there and scream. I'm Art Bell with Daryl Sims. We'll be right back. You are indeed. My guest is Daryl Sims. He's a UFO investigator. And what he said during the last portion of the last hour, I thought made a lot of sense, and that is a lot of these UFO abductees have, essentially, a screensaver kind of memory, imposed on their mind after the experience. And when you lift that, when you get inside that, you find somebody who's been screaming. We'll pursue all that in a moment. Right now, across the nation and beyond, Daryl, there are UFO abductees listening to what you're saying right now. And you're saying, I guess, to most of them, if I'm hearing you correctly, that whatever experience they think they had that was warm and fuzzy, they probably didn't have at all. Is that correct?
That generally is the case. It doesn't mean that contactees out there, people who refer to themselves as contactees or have that mentality, it doesn't mean some of them didn't have positive experiences, because it depends on what it is they're going to do to you as to whether you refer to it as positive or not. But the issue is that many of these people, including abductees, have been given a screensaver memory, and once you get past that, in many cases, you're going to find something else. A perfect case in point is a professor's wife I worked with over in Slovakia when I did a presentation for the former intelligence agents from the Soviet Union and the Soviet bloc that broke off from the Soviet Union then. And we all got together and had an incredible time, and I gave a four-hour presentation. And one of the things I did was to work with his wife afterward. She said, "I've been a contactee, and I just feel like something's wrong. And I don't understand this." And I worked with her maybe 15 minutes, and I'm telling you, she started screaming. She says, "Oh, my God, they're lying." And she figured that out. No one sold her a thing. She figured it all out by herself. You just have to teach them to remember with their body, because your body remembers everything.
All right. Is some of it so terrifying that perhaps they'd be better off not remembering?
My response to everyone that writes me on the UFO phenomena, and in a case in point, guy wrote and said, he said my mother was there. He says, I know that's true. He said, but I could be making it up. I said, buddy, please don't do this. If you open Pandora's box, you'll never get it closed. And I said, it's something you're going to live with the rest of your life. And he did. He went to his mother and told her the story, and she finally confirmed it for him. Young man, about 23 years old. And she says, but they always brought you back. He said, what am I going to do now? I said, what are you going to do now? I said, I told you, if you open this box, you're never going to get it closed.
And you've been at this 38 years, including this latest Pennsylvania case. What is the best physical evidence that you've found, collected, or even seen?
The best physical evidence that that I've enjoyed and is some of the... the physical evidence we find on the abductees, or in this case, in the Pennsylvania case, we actually found in their home. They actually had a print of a large hand, which I put on, it's on your website, as a matter of fact, and under my presentation there tonight, it shows a whole series of handprints on the wall there, and we actually removed the sheetrock because it had a suet material, oily-like material, to the huge handprint. Now, I have very large hands, and those fingers are about nearly 4 inches longer than mine.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. You say 4 inches larger than yours?
Yeah, when they're stretched out, they're curled down. They're longer than mine, even though they're curled down. If you straighten them out, they're about 4 inches longer. They're very, very similar to young man, I saw on your website a young man that had a handprint across his chest, and I wrote him about his event, and I said, I want you to look at this hand that I'm going to put up there tonight. I said, the reason I'm asking you to do this is because it's very similar to the same size of the hand that's on your chest. And I said,
yeah, it's very hard in this photograph that you've supplied, and I'm looking at it right now, to make out the scale, the size, the actual size.
Look at the, if you can, go to the, I'm going to pull that up myself here, but if you can.
Okay, you've got a,
yes, sir.
Oh, I see.
Yes,
all right.
Just pan down.
You've got a ruler there.
Yes,
yeah,
sir.
You've got a ruler there.
Yes, sir.
Wow.
The thing is huge. I've never seen one that big in the UFO phenomena. That's just very unusual.
Yeah, I needed to scroll down. Yeah, I see you've got all kinds of scale in here. Okay. Yeah, that's big, all right. Holy smokes.
And then when I saw that one of the young man with the hand across his chest who woke up in the morning with that big print on his chest, I thought we may have the same guy here. So
how did this handprint get on the wall?
The young man describes the entity, even consciously, at some of these events consciously, the entity leaning against the wall there. And, of course, naturally, I talked to them. She was doing a lot herself. But I had mentioned to her that we need to check this with a fluorescent lighting and different kinds of light infrared and ultraviolet lighting. Mm-hmm. And she started doing this as best she could before I got there. And then she actually took a marker and drew around the soot that was there to give an illustration of how much material was left on the wall. Obviously, we want to do DNA testing on that and find out if there's anything there that we need to know about.
Okay. So you've got this. What other, over the years, what evidence, other evidence have you actually run into? Have you ever been presented with a piece of spacecraft, a spacecraft?
Well, we've been presented with several things that that in theory were part of a spacecraft, and after I examined it for nearly 2 years, I found out that it wasn't. It was a piece of high-tech material, but it in fact was not part of the, and they alleged it was a Roswell craft. The guy that gave me the piece paid $35,000, do you not even believe this, to an ex-CIA guy who also was a scammer, in my opinion, and was out of the company and was bootlegging, doing all kinds of things, including break-ins and everything else. And he met this guy, and the guy needed the money, and so he gave him this piece of high-tech metal and said, this came from the Roswell crash. The guy bought into that and paid him $35,000, and it took me a year and a half to finally figure out that that had nothing to do with anything. Not really.
All right. Well, how do we know any of this is real? And by that, I mean, how do we know, you know, and I know that the people who are reporting abductions and all the rest of it, really, truly, I don't for one second doubt that they believe what they're saying. But there's a gap between that and being able to prove that it really happened, that it that all this is real, that it's not just made up bunk or sleep paralysis or whatever.
I agree with you. There was a CNN called, and they spent 2 days down here at my home and asked if they could come up, and they said, we'd like you to debate Dr. Susan Clancy at Harvard and so on. And I said, there's no debate. I said, I win. She says, no, that easy. And I said, yeah, it actually is.
Oh, no, wait a minute. How do you win so easily?
She said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, the problem is, I said, you're asking me to debate, and it was Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs and myself. You're asking us to debate her viewpoints. I said, her premise is incorrect. She said, what do you mean? I said, well, she's assuming that everyone's asleep and they're having sleep paralysis. She said, yes. I said, young lady, I said, I was abducted when I was hunting in a hot New Mexico desert at 16 years old. What kind of sleep paralysis do you think I was having in broad daylight? I said, do you know that over 60% of abductions occur in daylight or in waking times? I said, her premise
okay,
is incorrect.
But you know, let me play devil's advocate for a moment. Sure. There are instances of people having psychotic slips, having all kinds of psychiatric short-term problems that are remembered by that person in certain ways, even during waking moments. How do you prove it, Daryl?
Dr. Gene Mundy, professor emeritus, Long Island University, did a study specifically. She teaches this on a PhD level. I said, why didn't you call her in as one of your consults? I said, she will tell you that by and large, the abductees that she's interviewed many of them. She said these people have no psychopathology. Same thing John Mack and others found out. There is no psychopathology that is resident in these people by and large. They're normal, natural people having amazing events. She said, first of all, hallucination isn't even formed that way. And you can't have group hallucination over 50 years. It isn't going to happen. She says, it's not the nature. Should I teach this on a PhD level?
No, but we have not moved all. We haven't moved all of this, Daryl, from the anecdotal story to hardcore proof of any kind at all that takes the whole abduction scenario from stories and certainly interesting stuff to reality. I don't know how we move it from here to there. Do you?
Well, one of the things we've done is to focus on, this is exactly our viewpoint, is to focus on physical evidence. And this is the reason that the Pennsylvania case interested me, because in my view, if we don't provide the medical and scientific community with good, solid evidence, we're not going to be able to make a case, period. That's why I finally wrote a book after 38 years, because I think now we can make a case. I think we've got sufficient evidence now, we know where to go. For instance, many of these abductees, when they come in and tell their stories, or contactees, whichever the case may be, these people are, by and large, telling the truth as best they remember it or recall it. And they, one of the first things I look at when I look at these people is to look at and do a handwriting analysis on their handwriting after they fill out this 25-page form. We're questioning them in great detail, because I'm actually able to tell whether they're lying or telling the truth, and I teach that on the college level for psychology courses as an example, just by monitoring them. And then second, and which is really important, after you get into their case, like the Pennsylvania case, is there evidence of any contact? I don't care what your story is there evidence?
If you, okay, objectively, let's look at the evidence you've got. You've got a handprint on a wall.
Yes.
That they sort of outlined after the fact. I'm not sure what that proves. You've got a soil sample taken from, I guess, allegedly where this craft landed. Is that correct?
The lady had mentioned that she heard a huge, this will really rattle some of your people out there in the audience, a helicopter come in the middle of the night. And, of course, I'm sitting here listening to this, and I know it's not a helicopter. And if the story is true, it is highly likely it's a ruse for a UFO. And she said, but I don't understand. How could it come through those trees and that level and with the guide wires and things here? But the next morning she sees where the grass is burnt out there in three places in her backyard at 33 feet apart in a triangular form. And she's absolutely sure that that was a helicopter. Now, this is a perfect screen memory. She was so sure. She woke up, heard the helicopter. And she said, it was so loud, I couldn't believe it. I said, why did it not wake up any of your neighbors? And she said, I actually slapped my husband to wake him up, to make him remember that I did this so that I can't let him know that I wasn't waking
got it.
Up making
All right,
up.
Well, you've got the soil samples.
Have
you analyzed?
No, we
the soil
haven't.
Samples.
We just got back from with the samples and everything, and we one of our difficulties, and this is another reason I'm on your program tonight to mention this. I have, for the last 15 years, spent the majority of my additional income investigating cases. We never charge abductees a penny. We perform 24 surgeries to date, or been responsible for 24 surgeries. And any portion of that we did, we never charged them a penny. We just don't do that. We don't charge anything for any of these experiences. And I've never asked anybody for money and don't want to ask anybody for money.
Well, how do you pay for it?
Well, I pay for it out of my own pocket. And basically what's happened up till this last year, I just finally got tapped out and kept my family pretty much financially broke. And I told them, I said, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to go back into real estate investing. And I found me a wonderful piece of property that if I can sell it and sell it for about half price, I can probably make enough to, in my opinion, pay for nearly two boxes of forensic evidence that we have right now, including a sexual assault on one abductee. We have the bed sheets and everything else from that event. So I'm not saying all these cases are 100%. What I'm saying is that they need to be looked at by people. I'm just the police officer in the deal here.
Mm-hmm.
My business is just to get it ready for the forensic lab, and we have a volunteer for a forensic lab right now, but we do have to pay for the cost of the university.
It's very expensive.
Yes, sir.
I know,
yes,
because
sir.
I had a piece I had tested, and it
yes,
came
sir.
Up very anomalous, but boy, it cost us a bunch of money, and Linda Howe and I kind of split the cost of having it tested. There's no magic angel that comes along and provides money for this.
That's true. That is so true. So what I've done is I literally prayed about it. I mean, I honestly felt like that if I need to be doing something here, that there need to be some kind of other help, you know. I mean, we got everything against us. And I came into a remarkable situation where a $5 million building with over half built a medical facility I put a contract on it, and they agreed to it at a remarkable price. And if I can sell that building to I will pay for not only all the UFO work that we've done here, but if that thing does go through, I will call you back privately and tell you what we're really going to be looking at, which in my opinion will be the smoking gun, so to speak, of physical evidence. But that's at this
point. So you have something you cannot mention. You cannot tell me about?
Right, not over the phone. No, I'd need to do that in person.
Why?
It's not a violation of, because it doesn't have anything to do with my intelligence background. Doesn't have anything to do with that. It's just there are some cases that two in particular that we have found that are so remarkable that if in fact they are true as they seem to be. Because it takes the money then to exploit these, and I don't mind spending the money on it, even my own. But at this point, I'm tapped out, so I've got to sell this. So if you have anyone in that audience that has an interest in a medical facility over half built and want it for less than half price, I guarantee I'll give anybody in your audience $30,000 if they know anyone that has the money wants to buy that building. It's theirs. $30,000 is theirs free, and I guarantee I will change the face of ufology in terms of physical evidence.
Well, you're implying you have some physical evidence.
Yes.
Okay, without telling me where it is so that it's safe, why can't you give us an idea of the nature of the evidence?
Just that it's physical, and that if the one case turns up to be true, we may have another Roswell.
Another Roswell.
Well, the only difference is it's not the government.
Another Roswell. Well,
that's all.
Are you going to say you have a craft? Are you going to say you've got live or even dead aliens? Any of the above would be.
I don't know. Until I examine the case, I don't know. All I know is that the data so far has been interesting enough for me to spend to get ready to spend $3,000 just to look at it. It's been that good to me. So I will pursue it.
Well, when you say you have another Roswell, that's a lot.
If the story bears out, yes.
Really piqued my interest here. So all you've got is a story, or do you have more?
Well, we have a little more than the story. As an example, also this is the... This year, I'm a member of the staff at the Roswell Museum, and I found a witness, an additional witness, who was supposed to find the bodies out of Roswell. And this guy had never talked to anybody, didn't want to talk to anybody, scared to death. Still, one of these old-style guys, still scared to death of government, thinks they're going to come get him, thinks he's going to lose his pension and all that. I spoke to him, and he finally, he didn't trust me for a long time. Finally, we sit there, and he went in and brought the biggest stack of old pictures of that time era and his flight buddies and everything that he did. Just amazing guy. So I'm hopefully going to get him to come up to the Roswell Museum and do a presentation if he will do that this year. But he's not the when I mentioned the case of Roswell before, the craft, in my opinion, that crashed on purpose. I have a recorded conversation from someone I know that I trust 100%, that knows a little bit about what actually happened from one of the relatives.
We're going to come back to that, Roswell. And my guest, Earl Sims, thinks he's got another Roswell that I'm going to try and get him to tell us more about in a moment. From Manila in the Philippines, I'm Art Bell. My guest is Daryl Sims. He's been a UFO investigator for 38 years. And I'm going to give him a chance during the break to think about this a little bit, but he just made a statement that really needs a little bit of clarification, that he might have a case, another Roswell size type case with physical evidence and all the rest of that, and it's a little bit of money to get it all tested. I really need to know more, and I think all of you want to know more too. That's too much of a tease without giving enough good hard information. So ask him, we will. Daryl, you've been a UFO investigator for 38 years, and I've been a talk show host talking about this kind of thing for a whole lot of years. What we're going to leave the audience with tonight, if we don't go further, is a sense of just frustration and that they're not getting the real information. I mean, you sort of, I don't mean to appear mean, but you're laying out some stuff here and telling us what you can't tell us. You know, just too much of a tease without enough information. Daryl?
They say in real estate investing, the first person that speaks is the loser.
I see.
So I guess that's going to be me. The fact is that there are other cases that, first of all, we have that do have physical evidence that we are reasonably confident in. Even some evidence has been studied by genetic labs. Dr. Carla Turner, the late Dr. Carla Turner, gave me personally before she passed away. And other evidence, it's still, again, it just takes money to do this stuff, and that's the reason I want to sell this major building to do that. My secondary reason for wanting to sell that kind of a complex is simply because there are cases on very rare occasions that come up like this one that has. And there are two of them that I'm looking at right now, that if the stories are true, and there again, these are still, they're still stories at this point. If they're true, and if the information that has been given is correct, and it seems to be by the things that we've looked at, if it's worth a look at for me, it really is. And I would be prepared to spend the money to be able to exploit
that. I've got that, but give me more. You say you might have another Roswell. I don't care. Substitute something. Give me some idea of what this case involves.
It would just be, let's just say that if the story is true and the evidence recovered is satisfactory with that story, we will no longer, you will probably not be having a lot of guests on your program after that, talking about, you know, possibilities of what could be or what couldn't be. You'll have not only the smoking gun, but you'll have the one that fired it, so to speak.
Yeah, well, we'd all love that, and that's what we need to move ufology from the mystical to the reality.
Well,
and we really need to make that move, Daryl, because, I don't know, listening to you, it's kind of like, well, we've got this, and maybe we can do this, but why can't I need to understand why you can't give me more. Without giving away anything critical, you could even speak in generalities about the kind of case you're talking about that you've got here that's so important. I'd just like to know more about it without find a way to say it without saying something that'll give it away.
Honestly, and I mean this in with all due respect to you, because I respect you personally, there is absolutely nothing more that I can say about it. And in fact, the only reason I even mentioned it is because the fact that if we have the financing to cover these type of operations, I will exploit them. In fact, what's going to happen if this case turns out? I'll give you a hint. If this case turns out to be what it's supposed to be, if that's true, I'll disappear for probably 3 to 6 months, and when I resurface, then everybody will know what it's all about. But it's just.
Well, all right, let me try one on you. If this case is everything you say it is, Daryl, you wouldn't have to sell a medical facility or any other piece of real estate to get the money to investigate it. There's plenty of people out there with plenty of money if you've got something really good.
Well, I have not found that to be completely true. I've worked with several different people in the field, and even worked with NIDS, and which is a good organization.
Then that NIDS, for example, has the money behind it if what you've got is really solid.
Well, the fact is that you're in an awkward position there. The people, and rightly so. This is the reason I always do everything my own way. We even have people from other UFO organizations that sends us their physical evidence to do the examinations of, because they don't trust their own organizations, because their biggest complaint is that their data disappears, and so does the evidence. The buck stops with me here. You know exactly where it's at. And in this case, whenever you have people who are funding you, so to speak, there is an expectation, and a reasonable expectation on their part, that they want to know all kinds of stuff. And in cases like this, the reason you don't have a Roswell now, and you probably have had one or two since then, is because people open their mouths. And that stuff will disappear so fast, you cannot believe it.
Well, I do understand what you're saying. And it is true that people who provide funding, and that they do have a reasonable expectation to understand they're not wasting their money, Daryl.
Sure.
So
that's why I want to spend my money. If I spend my money, I'm not answerable to other people. And whenever the evidence is finally examined and looked at by people, not me, I'm just the investigator. My job is to find the evidence. It's to dig this stuff up and to go through it, putting my police hat on, so to speak, and to be the detective in that aspect, and look at it from other points of view. And then to take the evidence, present it to labs, forensic labs, particularly in universities where most of our stuff goes, and let them give us an opinion, because we don't hand this stuff over to people and say, this is our predisposed opinion, go ahead and support it.
All right, so you're distrustful of groups like NIDS or any other similar groups. You're distrustful of them. Is that correct?
No, I've had very good response with NIDS on the things that we have cooperated on and done. as you hinted out very well, in the UFO community, there is just a lot of. It's just far easier if you have your own money and do your own thing. You don't have the politics and so on. In our organization, we have a number of scientists, two of them are NASA scientists and others. We have quite a few people that are on our team, and the rules are real simple in our organization. If you want to fight, if you want to create a problem, you're history. It's just that simple. I don't care how valuable you are, how good you are. If you're not going to be a team player, you can't play. That's all. So that's the only real strict rule that I have about it. I don't mind the skeptics. I love skeptics. As for scientists, we have. We just don't allow debunkers, because they already know what they're going to do. But skeptics are fine, and that's great. But we just will not allow people to. I'll give you a perfect example. I asked Bob Bigelow when I was speaking with him. I said, Bob, I've got to ask you a question, because it's always going to be asked of me that you actually spoke to Bob Bigelow and you didn't ask him the big one. I said, so the big one is this. You offered a lot of money to the MUFON and the Fund for UFO Research and KUFOS. Why did you withdraw it? He said, I'm glad to answer the question. He said, it's real simple. He said, Daryl, he said, out of it was either 2 or 3 years that he had offered all that money. He said, I couldn't. He said, the only requirement I had for those three organizations was to do one thing only, and that was to pick out any project you wanted. It didn't matter to me what it was. I will pay for it. But you all have to agree on what that one project is. He said, Daryl, in all those years, I could not get all those people to agree even on one thing. I was so frustrated. He said, I finally withdrew my money.
No, I believe it.
There's the answer to the question. Why do I want to use my own money? I mean, if NIDS can't deal with it, with the UFO community, why would I want to try it?
Well, if you have something as big as you're claiming you have.
Well, it's the claim is their claim. It's not mine. It's until I look at it, I make no claim. It's very interesting.
Well, for you to even bring this up, you had to have had some sort of look at it. You know, something. There must be some proof or some level of validity that you've determined there is to what you know so far to even have you mentioned this on the air as you have.
Sure. That is correct. I'm interested. It's got my interest. It has certainly got my interest.
It certainly got mine too. I certainly wish you could tell me more about it.
I wish I could too. Yeah, you have no idea.
Let me give you an example of how you could tell me about this. You could say, look, in the southwest part of the country, or the northwest, it doesn't matter. I've got a story from somebody, without giving any names, that says that a craft came down. And that we actually have this physical craft at a certain location, which I could take you to and allow you to collect all the physical evidence you want, or there is a being, or there's a body, or there's a live alien, or something. In other words, you could give me a kind of a general idea of what it is you're working on without telling me any specifics.
You should have been in the intelligence field. That's good. Answer is no, and respectfully so, because if you knew the story, you would get onto me for even mentioning it, especially if it were true, if it turns out to be everything that it's supposed to be, or even if it turns out to be half what it's supposed to be. Anyway, it's just my job to explore, and that's what I do. That's the detective part of this. I'm a licensed private investigator in the state of Texas, and this is what I also do. I mean, this is my policing background. All this is brought together in this field because I know that the events are real. We've got a sample of an alien hair that was left by a woman. You remember the Chalker case in Australia?
No, we have a not offhand. Remind me.
The individual was assaulted by a female Nordic type, for lack of a better term. Blonde-haired female alien, and she sexually assaulted the guy. And he, during the course of this, couldn't apparently overpower her mentally. As a result, he bit a part of her flesh and kept it in his mouth. And there apparently was a hair sample as well. And they did the DNA analysis on this and found that there are only like 6 people on the whole planet that have that DNA. And the best example of it is in Mongolia, in a rare tribe. Which may, again, suggest all kinds of other things to the people out there in genetics. But we've got a case right here in the United States with an alien hair sample of a guy who was sexually assaulted, almost the same story, elderly gentleman, and actually had the hair sample. So we've got that. We probably got 2 boxes of DNA evidence of even one person who an artificial insemination, which MUFON recently stated by their doctor that those really don't exist in terms of alien artificial inseminations like the Betty and Barney Hill type situation. Well, if that may be true, but we may have evidence that shows something different, sonograms and other things that show something vastly different in there as opposed to a woman telling a story. And when you put all those things together and then the possibility that we may have a possibility of 3 people who are here without, and of course, the doctors are not going to be real surprised to find out that the husband's not the dad, the father, but they may be very surprised to find out the mother may not be the mommy.
In other words, that would mean that some sort of embryo was implanted.
Yes.
Is that what you're implanted?
Okay. Dr. Jacobs and Bud Hopkins, myself, have all said this for many years. Every abductee says what? They either took my sperm or they took my eggs. We felt like they did. Well, the question everybody needs to be asking instead of, oh, they're helping us, they need to ask the big question. You know, where's the milk factory? Where's all this stuff going? And what are they doing with it? Not just there, but what about here?
All right, let's go backwards for a second. You said that you thought that the Roswell craft was crashed, if you want to use that word, intentionally.
Yes, sir.
Why do you believe that?
Well, it's just a thought I have. One day I just got to look at Roswell. I'm not a Roswell investigator. Stanton Friedman and these other boys are, and they're doing a great job, and I appreciate that.
Right, but to make that statement, you've got to have some solid reason for it.
But the fact is, I wanted to look at Roswell from a totally different point of view. I wanted to look at it from an intelligence point of view. And if one wanted to penetrate the United States government or any government, what would be the best way to do that? Well, one of the best ways to do that was for allow us to capture you. In effect, any abductee or contactee out there can tell you that one of these entities, little entities, can download your thinking process immediately. They know exactly what you think. They know everything about you instantly. Mm-hmm. It's really a remarkable process. The point is, it doesn't matter whether you're captured or whether they captured you. But if we capture...
Well, I suppose that's true. So, what you're saying then about Roswell is just sort of a scenario that you put together.
The fact is, they crashed the craft, in my opinion, and eventually there would be a handler of the alien entity or two that survived. The handler turned out to be one of the top generals in the military-industrial complex. Well, duh. Let's suppose that the entities can do what I just mentioned, and you just placed your top general. Now, what makes this story interesting is I found out about 2 years ago, and this came from someone very personal, very close to me, someone I trust with my life. They met an individual who was a relative of the high-ranking general who was assigned to the alien entity. And on the deathbed of this general, he told the relative the whole story, not just the Roswell, but the rest of the story that he did not tell the rest of the military-industrial complex. Well, I'm sure they'd like to know what that story was all about. The fact is
too.
That he ended up getting, becoming a, you want to hear me to put it in an interesting term, the Stockholm Syndrome, he became a victim of that himself and actually became friends with the entity. And, I mean, this entity hoodwinked him from the word go. And he never did tell the military-industrial complex the rest of the story of how they were friends. He only told them the things they needed to know in terms of intelligence and so on. What he didn't know was he was being used, that he was as much a pawn as the alien was for their causes. If that information is true, and they can download, and the big question any abductee should ask as well, and I asked this to all these people, and they look at me just stunned, like, you know, a calf looking at a new gate, like they never asked the question. Can an alien beam one in or out whenever they want to? Well, apparently they can, whatever that means. They can get them here or get them out, beaming them. I don't know what the term would be, realistically. But the fact is, if that were true, and he was here for 2, 5, 10, 15 years, why didn't he get beamed out? Because he was doing a good job here. You wouldn't remove your mole. You would keep it there.
Yeah, I suppose if you look at all of this, as you pointed out, from an intelligence point of view, you might do something like that. It's a credible scenario for a completely incredible thing, as far as most of the public is concerned. Listen, what we're going to do when we come back from the break that we're about to take is allow the audience to ask you questions. Do you think you're ready for that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. It's been a little frustrating, Daryl, in the sense that we hear about smoking guns and things ready to be tested, but no more than that. And so let's see what the public thinks. Coming up in a month, my guest is Daryl Sims, and we have certainly been, well, I guess the right word is teased a little bit, huh? Do you feel teased? I certainly do, but I guess I understand, and I guess I understand the distrust. After all, I said it myself, the UFO community shreds itself on a regular basis. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. All right, those are the phone numbers. My guest tonight is Daryl Sims. He's been a UFO investigator for 38 years, and obviously He's at a critical juncture in his own career where he's collected quite a bit of evidence. He's got a case that he's really hot about that he can't tell us about. And now it's your turn. So those are the portals to get in and interact with Daryl yourself and tell us what you think and or ask a question. Listen, just a reminder, coming up after tomorrow is the annual Ghost to Ghost program. So if you've got a really good ghost story, that'll be the night for that. In a moment, back with all of you and Daryl Sims. One question from the Fast Blast that I get, Daryl, before we go to the phones, comes from Mike in Auburn, Washington, who asks, please ask Daryl if he's investigated contactee James Gilliland. James Gilliland has claimed he's had a lot of warm, loving contacts with ETs. Does Daryl believe that this warm claim by James is just another screensaver implanted in his mind? He is a pretty big name these days in what's going on out there.
Yeah, there. I don't know him personally, but I do know of a case in England that is similar in that sense of the word. They've their events actually started out horrific and with MIBs and all kinds of other things. And now the young man who is involved in that case is literally thinks of the best thing since ice cream. And I've talked to his mother at great length, and I said, "Young lady, I said, I love you people to death, but I'm telling you, you're getting the wool pulled over your eyes. You have no idea what you're stepping into here." And there, and that's fine. You know, I'm not here to try to convince anybody of anything different. I mean, if you're happy with your experience, hey, more power to you. But
you don't
not
believe
for me
it.
So, and my family. No, sir.
So
no, sir.
Then also that would be a case, the case across the board then, as far as you're concerned, pretty much.
Yes, sir. Even the cases that are positive, in my opinion, there's a purpose to that. And everything we did in the CIA wasn't bad to people. It was just manipulation. That's the nature of intelligence. These entities, the thing that stunned me about these entities was when I got in the CIA, when I learned the system and some of the training that I went through, it amazed me that that's exactly what they're doing. It's nothing but intelligence. It's the same thing.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's do it. Promised it. Here it comes. Wildcard line, Jeffrey from Nashville, you're on with Daryl Sims.
Mr. Sims, good evening.
Yes, sir.
Art, good evening as well. Mr. Sims, I understand through the Roswell movie that throughout the years, one of the aliens that was still alive, that had a corpsman next to his side at all times, supposedly had a deep craving for strawberry ice cream. Is this true?
I have no idea, sir. I have it on some fairly decent information from some people that are in the know, and there again, that doesn't mean anything because I'm just another person telling another story. It was told to me by someone that I find credible, but they indicate to me that, and that, believe me, they're in a position to know that they know where the bodies are at, they know what's going on. But as far as ice cream and that sort of thing, I don't know. I wasn't that close to it.
Okay. Now, also, I've had a near-death experience. You understand?
Yes, sir.
So, gaining somewhat of a psychic ability, I can pretty well much sense when something not in the norm is in the round. I can pretty well much collaborate with you that yes, most of these entities usually go after a Catholic or a Irish and Cherokee background. We don't know why, but is this the norm?
45% of the people that we have, and I have over 1,000 cases worldwide. I do a lot of presentations worldwide. Over 45% of these people are Native American Indian Irish.
All right. Why do you believe that is?
We're not really sure. There is a paper that was written by a genetic engineer that is rather remarkable. That paper, if anybody wants to email me, I'll be glad to send it to them. but it's basically entitled The Irish, A Race Apart. And it shows how different that the Irish are opposed to other people in terms of genetics. We would only be guessing as to what some of the rationale for this is. In fact, Bob Bigelow asked me one time, he said, Daryl, he said, you seem to be able to find physical evidence. And he said, and a lot more of it than anyone ever believed was out there. He said, what do you give that credit to? And I said, well, it certainly isn't any high IQ or anything, sir. And he said, he laughed and he said, then what is it? And I said, now, this may sound a little off-center to you, I said, but basically, I said, if you'll get an Indian to hunt these guys, I said, you'll do a lot better. And
first
I said,
time,
just X1, you'll find them. You'll find right. evidence that you'll never find otherwise, I think.
Brandon in North Carolina, you're on with Daryl Sims.
Good evening, Art, and congratulations to you and your wife. I've been wanting to tell you for a while.
Thank you.
I listen to you all the time. I was in the Navy like George, and my grandfather was in the Air Force, so hoorah to you. I called George a while ago when he had a guest on aliens, and I asked this host or guest question he really didn't want to comment on. The Raelians, the cult that claims they cloned the first human, they also claim that they think aliens put life on Earth. I was wondering what your just personal opinion on that would be, how because I figure it might be kind of like you were saying there in they're the intelligence, they're coming down watching us. Maybe they're just observing the mice in the cage, so to speak.
Okay, the Raelians, that's a kind of an interesting place to go, I suppose. Daryl, you have any comments on that?
The Raelians, some of their people, in fact, as an MD and his wife came and spoke to the Houston UFO Network some time ago, and of course, we like on the Art Bell program, you know, listen to anyone and let them give their spiel, and then we ask questions, which I did at the end. And some were pretty tough. The Raelians, in my opinion, are is nothing, in my opinion, more than a sex cult that are out on the ragged edge of sanity. But that's just my opinion. And I don't agree with the idea that the alien has come here and seeded the planet and done all this. Listen, people, some of the latest medical research shows that 0.002% of your brain is all you actually use. That's 0.002%. If that's true, do you suppose that somebody out there might be interested in using the other 99.98% of your brain? I mean, you're not using it anyway. I'm not using it. I mean, is there any possibility that we might not be the lab rats that we think we are? There's an ancient saying that says you were created wonderfully. And if you go at it from the other direction here, if that statement is true from the Bible, that you were created wonderfully, one might wonder if we're the only ones that don't get it. Somebody out there apparently has come a long, long way to get whatever it is you have.
And got it. All right. West of the Rockies, Mike in North Hollywood. You're on with Daryl Sims.
Good evening, Art.
Good evening,
Daryl.
Yes, sir.
I guess the basic question I have is okay, Roswell is Roswell, Kecksburg is Kecksburg. What exactly is it that you're bringing to the table? I mean, I myself believe that there is other life out there. Okay, what we don't have, per se, is the smoking gun, the actual proof in your hand. Is that what you are giving us?
Well, that's what I would like to provide the UFO community and people at large. We do have physical evidence. In fact, Dr. Carla Turner, as I mentioned just before she passed away, gave me physical evidence that was examined by a forensic lab. Their response to that was that that compound cannot exist in this matrix. That's some of the scariest stuff we've ever seen, and we don't want to examine it any further. We will not give you a report, and we don't want any contact with it. What I have found out about that particular
information— Wait a minute. That's a very strange response.
It was.
Can you tell us what— Hold on.
Yes, sir, I can. I'm happy to share any of the information.
All right, then what lab gave you that report?
It was the lab that gave her the report. I'm trying to get that lab name and information from her husband, who has not responded thus far, but I do have the physical evidence. And we've had it looked at, and they say what it seems to suggest is that there is two materials that are commingled. One is metallic and one is biological. And it's akin to the idea of two substances can't occupy the same space at the same time. Like, for instance, a stick sticking out of a wall, as if it had gone through the wall without being penetrating the wall itself. That seems
well, that's
to be
pretty strange, right? But I'll tell you, Daryl, if some lab had come back to me after I paid him to do an analysis of something and gave me that report, I'd want my money back right away.
Well, Bob Bigelow, case in point, one of our implant cases for two people we did the surgeries on, removed four objects from them. I did a presentation for NIDS and with 18 of their scientists present, and they grilled me to no end. And at the end of the day, that we were the only UFO group chosen for them to spend $22,000 on this study. The study showed that the materials turned about to be meteoric in origin, that were removed from these people surgically deep within their bodies. And, I mean, is that extraterrestrial or what? You know, how many meteorites you know that aren't? And
I would say that's pretty hard evidence. If you get a report back saying this could only have come from a meteor and it came from inside somebody's body, you're onto something. Caller, anything else?
No, thank you, Art, and I hope to hear you 5x9 on 3830.
Okay, buddy, take care. If you've got something that came from a meteor and you find that inside a person, it seems to me that's as close to a smoking gun as you might get, short of a craft or a being.
Yes, sir.
Okay. First time caller line. Michael, you're on with Daryl Sims.
I was just wondering, what are they after that it makes them so bad? I listened intently, and I don't know if I missed it or what, but what is the problem with these aliens that is making the experience so bad, and that these are not friendly aliens? What are they, you know, here to do to us, or, you know, against us?
Well, let me take you to my personal experience very briefly. My event started quite harmlessly. Entity was in the room. There he was. I didn't know what in the world the thing was. I just have a better idea about what the makeup of it may be. But long story short, after 13 years, I became what you might refer to as a resistor in every sense of the word, and I was not cooperative in any sense of the word. At that point, they sent somebody a little bigger to handle the problem in my last event. I refer to them in my book. I break this hierarchy down a bit and go into this, but basically what they sent was the butcher, so to speak. And when they can't deal with an individual who's part of their program, and they can't manipulate that, and they can't do anything, when you become obstinate, I guess, for lack of a better term, they send somebody to solve the problem. MIBs show up when there's a problem that the alien can't handle. And that's just the bottom line. It's just the SS of them.
The extraterrestrial Guido.
The system. They just don't understand it.
All right, your book is Alien Hunter, The Evidence in Light, correct?
Yes, sir, that is correct.
How long has it been out?
It's just been out a few months. I've just, after 38 years, I wrote it, and a movie director asked me, he says, why did you take you 38 years to write a book? And I said, because I didn't think we could make a case until now. I said, but I think we can now.
You believe your book makes a case?
I think that it indicates that there, in fact, is plenty of evidence around, and that it shows abductees and other people how to find their own evidence and process a lot of their own stuff. You don't need 40 scientists and 30 other people to tell you what to do or how to think. All you need is good directions, and the directions are in the book.
All right, let's go to the international line all the way to Mexico. You're on with Daryl Sims. Hi.
Hello, this is Steven from Guadalajara.
Yes.
I have a question for Daryl and an offer, I suppose. It seems to me that throughout the entire conversation, you never have been specific about anything regarding this investigation that you want to conduct and expose. And it seems that there's a money problem. What if, what would you do or would you consider if I were to write you a high six-figure check and insist upon only one thing, that I be allowed to accompany you on your investigation. And the reason that I'm willing to do this and curious is because at the age of 11, I was abducted in a little small town just outside of Guadalajara. And I have about 2 hours of lost time that slowly over the years has returned in memory form. And I have never been able to get anyone to believe me or assist me in understanding just what the heck these people or these entities are up to.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, caller. That's very interesting, and I'd love to talk with you further about that. But why would you be willing to write a six-figure check without high six-figure, I think you said, without having an awful lot of details, if not most of the details, of what you would be investigating?
Well, that is why I placed the counsel there of being able to be at his side.
Yeah, but you wouldn't write the check until you knew, right?
Oh, no, I would absolutely write the check and then accompany him on his investigation. I just would.
Daryl?
It would answer so many questions for me. And what was it one man said many years ago? One man's nickel is another man's treasure.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, Daryl?
I am interested in your offer, and if you are as blunt and as truthful as I am, I would seriously consider that, and you're welcome to contact me, and my information, contact information is on his website there, and contact me tonight if you like, and I'm delighted to speak with you about it. And if my opinion is this, if you do not trust the find, or you do not trust me, or any part of this research, then, and I mean this, and I do truthfully, you should not invest not even one penny unless you are absolutely confident that I or what I do is not serious. If we're not serious, then you shouldn't put a penny in it.
Well, I know that
that's why I do my own money.
I know that there is something going on.
Yes, sir.
And I want to be a part of finding out what happened to
me
and what has happened to millions of people. So I can get to you through the coast to coast. And my name is Stephen from Guadalajara.
All right, I'm sure he'll be watching for your email, Stephen.
All right, thank you very much.
Keep us on, mi amigo.
Okay, take care. Yeah, very, 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 very interesting. That gentleman sounded
very
sincere to me, and he's one of millions. I mean, there are millions of people who deeply believe they've had these experiences, and perhaps they have, perhaps they have not. We don't really know for sure. That's the whole thing here. We've got to get the proofs.
That's what I'm all about. Physical evidence will answer a lot of the questions for this business. It really will.
It certainly will. East of the Rockies, Paula, you're on with Daryl Sims.
Hi.
We don't have a lot of time here before the break, so I might have to hold you over. Go ahead.
Okay. We've had three experiences happen to us. My husband, when he's in the military up in Virginia, we lived across the base, just across the street, and he was taken. And then all of a sudden, a baby I was carrying just disappeared. And then they showed up at our house down south in the middle of the night. Two of them showed up in the house, scared me half to death. And I must have scared them because all of a sudden, I mean, I just laid down, and you know, I thought maybe it was one of the kids was behind me or something, you know, because I felt like somebody was behind me. I turn, I roll over, and there are these two figures standing in the doorway, and the hall light's on behind them. And I started screaming for my husband to wake up, and all of a sudden I turned back towards them, and the whole room lit up like it was daylight. And all of a sudden, they were gone. And then they show up here one day.
All right, Paula, hold tight. Paula, hold tight. We'll be right back. This is Coast. 38 years investigating all of this. Daryl Sims is my guest. He's had a lot to tell us tonight and a lot he told us that he couldn't tell us. At any rate, if you'd like a moment or so with Daryl, if you have a question or a comment, and certainly there are millions of people out there in the same situation as this young lady and others who have called, who are thoroughly convinced they've been abducted, they've been taken. And that's, in my opinion, well, I agree both with Daryl and Dr. Jacobs. I don't think being taken is in our best interest, but that's just me and I guess a couple of other people. Back to it all in a moment. Stay right there. I'd like to remind all of you that Coast to Coast AM is a horse of a different color, so to speak. In other words, we present information that no other talk show that I'm aware of, national talk show of this scale, presents. And it's up to you to judge the veracity, the believability of what you hear. And obviously, some of what you hear is going to be absolutely the truth, and other things you hear are going to be tainted in one way or the other. We leave it up to you to be the judge. Daryl Sims, welcome back. And also, we've got Paula, who had almost, I think, completed her story. Paula, go ahead.
Okay. Well, the thing is, like I said, they showed up here again one day, and I just kept wondering why they kept coming back. And he mentioned the Celtic tribe, the Irish, and the Native Americans are Celtic and Egyptian. And we're both. And I just wondered why they kept coming back.
Well, one, that's I think you're following the right trail. You're on the right scent. And I want to say two things. Number one, I'd like for you to write me, because I'd like to send you about a 20-page questionnaire that I'd love for you and your family to fill out that would help us to determine some things about you. Number two is that every ancient land that was the world, a world power, or the Gnosis, or G-O-N-O-S-I-S, of the world at the time, such as the ancient Aztecs, Toltecs, Olmecs, ancient Egyptians, and all these ancient peoples that were really the hotshots of the time, all of them, in our opinion, and many other people's opinion, had contact with these entities for protracted periods of time. My statement is simply this, and you draw your own conclusions. All those ancient civilizations are now missing. Every one of them. And now we are the focus. Are you sure you want to play that game? I think we better find out what's going on and who's doing what.
All right. Mira, is it? Mira from Los Angeles?
Mira,
hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a basic question. I'm a very open-minded person, but I'm also a logical person. And I tried to listen to this guy's story from, you know, an open-minded perspective. And it's kind of been very difficult for me to really listen to him, because I feel like he's talking to a very specific group of people rather than speaking in a very logical way. Do you know what I'm saying?
I can address that, I think.
Yeah, go ahead.
But first of all, I'm the only UFO investigator that I know of that was asked to speak to 250 surgeons in a paid program on medical complications of alleged human alien contact.
Okay, but you use terms like, in fact, or the fact is, or, and I find it hard to listen to people who use words like fact when there's no documented evidence that's there for the entire world to see and actually experiment or see for themselves.
Well,
and there's certain words that you're using that kind of are a little disturbing to me and make me feel like there's somewhat of an agenda there, and also the mention of, like, money and real estate and stuff. I'm just wondering where you're coming from exactly.
Well, first of all, I finance all my own work. I ask no one of anything. I don't. I've always paid for everything. Not one person out there has ever been charged a penny for anything I do, and there are people in the UFO community that could never say that. My point is that I don't have any interest in, I want to pursue the phenomena and find out where this thing leads, and I'm willing to pay for that out of my own pocket.
But it seems to me a little bit like you have some idea set in your mind that you're trying to prove, rather than this open-minded approach of just approaching evidence. It seems like you have this entire theory laid out.
Well, I have my own ideas.
And I find that hard to take a little bit. It's almost like a politician talking a little bit, was the impression. And I don't mean it in any disrespect to you. I'm just telling you my first time kind of impression of hearing you speak. There was a little bit of that kind of, you know, politician talk almost going on, of like not really answering questions. And it's just, as a listener who's trying to just, you know, listen to something objectively, it's a little hard for me to take you seriously sometimes. And I'm just wondering if you have, like, a reason that you've gotten to that point where you speak that way, or what, you know, what's your perspective on that?
Well, my perspective from my point of view is that, generally speaking, right brain dominant people tend to tell stories, and they tend to lean upon illustration, metaphor, and this sort of thing, whereas primarily left brain dominants, they're interested in extreme specifics, and they want details that collate their experience. There's something that they can relate to in the same fashion. And the problem in the UFO world is that there is not a lot of physical evidence that's out there, and most of the evidence that we do find is already tainted. Forensic labs and others that we've talked to, and professors want this evidence in pristine form. They would prefer that you bring people in with fluorescence on them from alleged alien contact. They would prefer that you just bring them into the university, just fly them in there, and they'll take the evidence themselves. Well, that's real expensive to do. And most people are not going to fly all over the country to get some material removed from them that they feel like was part of their experience. So we're in a catch-22. A professor from MIT told me one time. He said, "Daryl," he said, "you're between the UFO community and the academic world." He said, "because those two worlds are probably never going to meet." He said, "the fact is that there has to be someone that will bridge the gap, and I have no idea whether I will be a good enough person to do that. I don't know, but I'm going to do the best that I can, and to bring that evidence." And again, the evidence that we gather, this is not up to me to decide what it is. It's only up to me to find it. It's up to the scientists involved, and we have quite a few of them that do this, to make their determination. If this evidence turns out to not be what it's supposed to be, or what it alleges to be, I don't want any professor or any scientist telling me or blowing smoke in my face and making me happy because he said something. I want to know exactly what it is. We have found quite a bit of evidence that did not measure up, and we publish every bit of it. We don't mind that at all. We're not predetermined to say what evidence actually is going to be, or we don't know that. We just don't know until the scientists examine it.
Here we go. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Daryl Sims from Turkey, Texas.
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good afternoon to you. I had one simple question for Mr. Sims. Has he done any research in the San Luis Valley of Colorado?
The answer to your question is yes. I've been there several times. I'm sure you probably know the investigator that does a lot of the investigations there.
Yes.
He's a very good friend of mine, and I've met him a number of times there and here in Houston. Uh-huh. And he's a wonderful guy. I think that is very much like the Skinwalker Ranch. That area is just so hot; it's just amazing.
It is. I lived there for about 15 years, and during the time that I lived there, there was, seemed to be like every month something was going on. And up around the Crestone area, especially.
Yes.
And around that area, around the San Diego Cristo Mountains, there's a lot of activity going on around there. And I was just, you know, curious to know if you had, you know, been up there and talked to those people.
I have, and he's quite capable of, to toot his horn here, he's quite capable of handling that without me. And we do talk, and he's asked me very recently to do some things for him, and I'm very excited to do that. He's a very capable investigator. I like him very well. He's well-respected in the law enforcement and the scientific community in that area. So I appreciate what he's done. Chris is he's a good guy.
Okay. West of the Rockies, Claudia, your turn with Daryl Sims.
Oh, yes. Good evening, gentlemen. Daryl, I just wanted to say I've really enjoyed what you've had to say, and I find that I think you're very credible, and I enjoy, actually, your independence and the fact that you're doing this independently. You should be congratulated. Anyway, I would like to come at this from a little bit of a different perspective, and you kind of hinted at it before. I do a lot of reading of mystical, sort of Eastern spiritual traditions that have direct spiritual awakening as part of the tradition. And I read a spiritual master. The only time I've ever heard or read anybody speak on this, on aliens, was that he said anyone who's had, any human being who's had a direct spiritual initiation, awakening, will never be abducted. And he didn't say why, but that's that he left it at that. But my thinking about this is that there's some aspect of this involved in the abductions. Either, what do you think? Could they possibly be collecting energy, dormant spiritual energy from people who are not awakened? And why do you think it would be that, would you be protected if you have that energy awakened, that they would protect you in some fashion? I'm basically interested in this phenomenon from that aspect. I just would like your opinion.
Very good question. It's definitely a different take. We've actually done a number of things, one of which is to we've had three different astrologers, not that I believe in astrology per se, but we've had three different astrologers come in and work with us on our stuff, and all three of them have been scared off from the research for various types of experiences that happened to them with their computer and with themselves and so on, and they were quite frightened by the events. I do know of a number. We have all kinds of people, first of all, that are literally. I'm going to have to stand up for my abductees here. Many of these people are enlightened, if you will. They're not the low end of the totem pole, so to speak. We have people that are geniuses, literally. Certifiably geniuses. We have people. Many of the people that we have are just average people, in the sense word that they have families. They just do their work. They do their thing. We have some people out there that I can't find out how they figure out how to find food. You know, they're so deprived of certain capacities. All of them are abductees. We have professors. We have scientists. We have two NASA scientists that are abductees. I mean,
that's true. It's right across the board.
It's across the board. Believe me, and mystics as well. Mystics as well. Please listen to this. Mystics and psychics as well. One of the first things I said in this conversation is I had already worked with several top psychics in this country. And I'll drop another eggshell on you, or a bomb here, and I had some people from the Nation of Islam show up at the Houston UFO Network and asked if they could write an article on me. Long story short is the number of the people in the Nation of Islam are abductees, including, in my opinion, Louis Farrakhan.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yes, sir.
Wild card line, your turn with Daryl Sims. Hi.
Hello. This is Chuck in Rockford. And I had a sighting that was about 40 years ago, almost to the day, and there was a lot of high profile people that had the same sighting. One was George Romney, and he's been a governor, you know, and a presidential candidate. Do you have any records on that particular UFO activity?
I do not have the records on that per se. I'm sure there are investigators that are, and it's going to be fairly easy to find out if that's available or not.
The whole country was just a hotbed of sightings.
Yes.
And the sighting that I saw was something just riding a laser beam right down to the ground. And I was very close to it, and it spooked. This was at night, and it spooked animals out of the field. And until you've actually seen something like that, you know, you just, you think people are kind of
crazy.
Absolutely true.
It's absolutely true. Of course, I've had my own experiences, sightings, that is to say. I have no way of knowing whether it was actually alien craft I saw, but there's no question about what I did see. I could draw you a picture. I've had pictures drawn of it. So once you've had the experience, it's not so easy to call people crazy, that's for sure. Let's go to West Virginia on the first time caller line. Jim, you're on with Daryl Sims. Hi.
Good morning there, Mr. Bell.
Morning.
And good morning, Mr. Sims.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I was in the Army for 6 years, and I originally signed up for a tank crewman, but they found out I could drive a tractor trailer. and I got volunteered to take all these oversized loads from Edwards Air Force Base to Wright-Patterson.
Yes.
And I had very oblong and shaped loads, and they were actually marked as a hazmat load, radioactive.
Yes.
And you can just imagine the kind of place that Wright-Patterson would have where you back up in the hangar and they lower you down underground.
Yes, sir.
To unload you.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
And I've carried several of those loads. And right now they're pretty much calling me back to haul more, so I don't know what's going on.
Maybe not after this program tonight.
Yeah, I'd be very careful what you say.
Yeah, very.
East of the Rockies, Larry, you're on with Daryl Sims.
Oh, hi, Mr. Bell. How are you?
Fine.
Oh, good, good. Yes, Mr. Sims, I've been abducted in my teen years, multiple abductions between 13 and 18, up until the point where I sort of learned how to fight it off.
Oh, yes.
And it would start with a loud electrical buzz in my head, which as I came to, it was always in sleep. It would be like an electrical charge in my body to where I couldn't.
Well, that's very much like the beginning of an OBE.
Out of body?
Yes.
Yeah. And I'd be able to open my eyes and look around a little bit, and then all of a sudden these beings would be there. And the memories are sort of short, but, you know, it's left me very disturbed. Mm-hmm. And having continuing problems with sleep because of it. So, you know, I was wondering, is there any type of, you know, any kind of support groups or anything like that?
As a matter of fact, I have one online.
Okay.
And if you'll email me, I'll be glad to put you online with a support group of a bunch of wonderful people. In fact, MUFON LA is a wonderful organization out there with the indomitable Jolene Ray Harrington and others out there on the staff are fixing to put some of their people in our support group there as well. It's all online. It's available.
Well, this gentleman is in Buffalo, New York. I think he needs something a little further east.
Yeah, that's a distance.
We'd love to hear from you because I'd like to send you some information, and it will help you a great deal.
Yeah, you had
especially if you want to resist.
Sure. Yeah, you had mentioned a questionnaire that you have.
Yes, that, and I'll also give you some information on how to resist, and you may end up getting a few extra visits, and it won't be from the little guys. It'll be from probably somebody else.
All right, we're going to have to end it there. The program is over. Daryl, there are millions and millions of people, as we now know, that the line just fills up with them, who have had this experience. They've been abducted. It's impossible to ignore. Daryl, thank you for being on the program tonight. Thank you for being
thank
with
you,
us,
sir.
And I'm sure we'll do it again. You take care, bud.
Thank you, sir.
All right, that's Daryl Sims, and it is true. Millions of people, too many to ignore this experience, are out there. The lines just fill up with them. Hey, listen, Ghost to Ghost is coming up. Don't forget, day after tomorrow, I'm looking for the best ghost stories out there, and that's what you can look forward to. From Manila in the Philippines, I'm Art Bell. Good night.